Welcome everybody. The time is 9:06 a.m. It is August 30th, 2022. Dr. Richard Marino, Chairman of the Board. This meeting is officially called to order.
If anybody has a chance to mute themselves
while they're not speaking, we need to do that so that we don't get feedback. And also, if you can keep your audio levels down on your own computer, that'll help with the feedback as well. Dr. Knopf, can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can. Am I coming through okay?
Yes, thank you. Okay, so let's get a roll call of board members present to establish a quorum.
Dr. Guarino?
Present.
Dr. Bennett?
Present.
Dr. Knopf?
Present.
Ms. Powell?
Present.
Mr. Turbinson?
Present.
Okay, great, we have a quorum. At every board meeting, we usually have at least a couple of newly licensed practitioners. It's a requirement to observe one of our board meetings, and hopefully it's a good learning experience for you. So thank you for in advance for attending. You need to stay with us till about noon today. We're going to take our agenda a little bit out of order today. We're going to start with tab number 2, and it's the matter of Dr. Harvey Abrams. We have 3 cases regarding that. Dr. Abrams, are you present? If so, you'll need to unmute yourself.
I am.
Great. And then go ahead and just introduce your name into the audio record, please.
Harvey Abrams.
Okay. And are you represented by counsel today?
I am. I'm Mandy Carvis.
Okay. Ms. Carvis, I think you're muted. I didn't hear you.
I was just waiting. Good morning, Doctor. I'm here for Dr. Abrams on the matters that are pending this morning.
Okay, great. I'm going to have our Executive Director, Ms. Vanderveen, give us a board brief, and then we'll proceed.
Do you want to take all 3 cases at once, or do you want to go one at a time?
I think we can take all 3 at the same time.
Okay.
They're similar in nature.
Okay. Misleading ads. Danger to the health, safety, and welfare, and professional conduct as to making false statements. Secret means of treatment and improper billing.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Carvis, would you like to make an opening remark regarding your client?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you for the opportunity. 2 of the complaints are very similar in nature. One was 2022-012 and 013 are similar in nature. We believe perhaps submitted by the same individual anonymously. So I'll address those, and then 2023. And Dr. Abrams is happy to address any questions that any members of the board may have in that regard. With respect to 012 and 013, with respect to the relabeling of supplements, Dr. Abrams has acknowledged to this board that he did that and that it was inappropriate for him to do so. He also acknowledged to this board that thankfully, none of those things were actually sold to patients. The issue was discovered and they were all pulled from the shelves. He should not have done that. He acknowledges that that should not have been done. In an effort to reflect on some of those things, he has voluntarily undertaken some ethics courses. We submitted the continuing education certificates for those. He took a couple of courses, ethics and social safety and healthcare, ethics, the importance of integrity. And he also has done some independent study, the power of ethics, how to make good choices in a complicated world. There's no way around the inappropriateness of that issue. And he acknowledges that. With respect to some of the supplemental information that was submitted to the board, I want to address that. Dr. Abrams thought that the black oxygen product had been removed from his website. It should have been removed when that product was discontinued. So that has, as of this morning, been removed. It is no longer there. It should not have been on there. So we have thanked the board for bringing that issue to our attention, and that was promptly addressed. The sale or availability of purchase of supplements in the office has significantly decreased since this time. And there is a protocol in place for ensuring that every month they are double checking the supply of the products for expiration dates, and any products that are set to expire or beyond the expiration date are pulled and not made available for consumption by patients. Again, he'll be happy to address any questions that you have with respect to those matters. With respect to 2022-023, and billing issues with respect to patients DA and RA. One thing that I think may not be clear from our response, and I apologize for the confusion as that in that regard, is that the billing that was submitted for both of these patients to their health insurance company was submitted by the patients themselves, not by Dr. Abrams or his office. They were being treated on a lien basis because they had a car accident and they were awaiting payment for that. They were not even aware that they had health insurance until such time as we received the board complaint. They didn't even know that there was medical insurance. So there's a lot of confusion about bills or records for DA being submitted under RA and various claims and EOBs. None of those bills were submitted by Dr. Abrams. The patient submitted those things to their own health insurance. So if they submitted things for one patient on another patient, and that's why it got rejected, Dr. Abrams cannot control them choosing to kind of try to independently, I guess, adjust their claim. He did not ever bill their health insurance. They submitted documentation to the health insurance. Since that time, however, the patients have actually gotten a new attorney. Within the last several months, Dr. Abrams was contacted by that new attorney in an attempt to negotiate the remaining balance for both of these patients. And Dr. Abrams informed that attorney that due to the pending complaint that he actually has written off the remaining balance for both of these patients. As such, we believe that this amounts to a billing dispute, and one in large part that was created by the patient's choice to provide and attempt to bill their health insurance directly, as opposed to just leaving the lien in place and resolving it at the conclusion of their legal matter. However, out of an abundance of caution with any issues there and confusion with multiple attorneys being involved, again, the patient balance for both RA and DA has been written off. Dr. Abrams is here and he's happy to address your questions. And also I should state that the reason that Dr. Abrams and myself are appearing via Zoom as opposed to being there with all of you in person today is due to a personal scheduling issue on my end. So please don't hold that against Dr. Abrams. I was having difficulty essentially being in two places at once. So we appreciate the accommodation. He's happy to address any questions that any members of the board may have. Thank you.
All right, thank you. I have a couple of general questions. This is Dr. Guarino again. Dr. Abrams, did you get your patients involved in multi-level marketing in your practice?
The direct answer is yes. I had a product that I had been looking for a while that fit the mold, and it was approved by the Canadian equivalent FDA, and a patient brought it in. I said that it was a good idea to have a product like that. So anyone that was interested in getting that product, that's the only way they could get it.
Okay. And I appreciate your concise and truthful answers. So thank you. So So when did you start using roughly the black oxygen product that was later found to have lead and arsenic in it?
Yeah, so when I found the product, it was about 3, maybe 4 months prior to that. And then discontinued it at the end of September, early October.
Okay. And then your testimony, Ms. Carvis said today that once you found out that the product was dangerous, that you pulled it from your shelves. Is that correct?
Actually pulled it prior to that. When my person that told me about the product, she said the company was having some issues. We weren't really sure all the details, but I said, I'm not telling anyone else about it. If people stay on it, they stay on it. But after October, like by the beginning of October, no one else was informed about it. No one else was told to sign up or anything like that.
Okay. And so how did you...
So the direct answer is, the lead comments were found out, I believe, after that. And then I was really glad that I was out of that.
Okay. So you said, Ms. Carvis said that when you, once you, you had a delay in taking the product off your website, correct? So it was like you were still advertising the product after it was found out it was dangerous.
I didn't even know that product was still listed. Even though the company was out of business, there was no product that could be delivered. But I didn't even know the product was still on our website.
Okay, so who manages your website?
It's someone inside that he's very part-time, but it was something that just I thought was taken down at the very beginning of October, and I just never checked. And we just found out.
So you manage your website. You hire somebody to make the changes, correct?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So I'm curious as to how you would take a patient who trust you with their health and get them involved with a product like this. What were you marketing it to them as to make them think it was going to be a good idea to become a distributor for this product?
Well, I didn't actually sign people up as distributors, just for customers. And I didn't sign them up. I passed them on to a website. And if they wanted to sign up, they could. So it was their choice.
Did you distribute their credit card information?
Never. No, I never had access to any of their credit card information because that was all done by their website.
Okay. I'm going to ask my other board members if they have any questions for you at this point, okay? So let's start with Mr. Turbinson.
Dr. Abrams, can you hear me?
Yes.
I have two brief questions. What was the time frame that you were manipulating the expiration dates on the product?
So about it was less than 2 weeks prior, because we do a monthly inventory. About 2 weeks prior, I had, in a nutshell, basically hired on an associate, and I was very stressed financially at that time and just made a very poor decision on doing that. But it was about a week and a half prior to doing the inventory. So, and that's when the employee brought it up to my attention.
And when you say 2 weeks prior, are you referring to September 2021?
If that's the date, it would be about that. Let me see. Um,
Dr. Abrams, just for reference, in the event that it helps, the complaint references September 1st was when the assistant was doing the inventory.
Okay, so then it would have been prior to that. Thank you.
Okay. And where were these products? Did you have these products for some period of time before that, and they had just been expired, sitting on shelves, or where were these products before you had manipulated the expiration date?
They were on a shelf, yes.
Okay. Okay, those are the only questions I have.
Okay, how about Dr. Knopf?
Thank you. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Dr. Abrams, part of the multi-level marketing complaint discussed the fact that credit card information was maybe held, written down, or on sticky notes. Do you agree that that's what had happened to then reactivate those patient accounts, or was that data stored somewhere else?
It wasn't with us. It was in their system. So the only system that was used was their multi-level system to access any information, and you can't see credit card information. So unless that person was giving that information again, there was no record of it.
Okay, so you deny that part of the complaint, that any credit card information was just written on Post-its?
Correct.
Okay. And then you said that this product was approved by the Canadian equivalent of the FDA. Is that correct?
That's what I was informed, yes. And that's what they had on their video, on their website.
Okay. And you realize that that's different than being approved by our government's FDA?
Absolutely. Correct? Yeah.
Okay. And have you sold other products non-FDA approved?
Many.
Such as?
Most vitamins and supplements are not FDA approved.
Okay, thank you. And then jumping over to another complaint, there's allegations that the patients weren't even seen for dates of service that were documented. Do you deny those claims?
Correct. Yeah. I've seen them for everything that was listed on their bills. They were seen.
Okay. That's all the questions I have at this time. Thank you.
Okay. We're going to move on to Ms. Powell. If you are muted, unmute. And if you have any questions, now is the time.
I have two questions, Doctor. Did any of your patients notice that expiration date was incorrect on any of the products you sold and bring it to your attention?
They were never sold to a patient, so no products actually that were relabeled were sold. The reason they were on the shelf so long, I guess, is because they were never sold originally, and so those are the ones that got relabeled. And again, poor choice on my half, but no products were sold to patients.
Okay, just this one patient that noticed?
Not a patient, just the staff when they were doing inventory.
That came from staff.
On the monthly.
That's the only question I had.
Okay, Dr. Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Abrams, this is Dr. Bennett. I noticed that you made the comment in your response that you're in the process of trying to get I'm in the process of trying to get most of my patients to transfer to direct purchase of the products from FullScript. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. And you are, at this time, you are still offering and selling supplements to your patients?
Correct.
And are you doing it directly? Would you care to comment on why you made the comment about directing purchase of products through FullScript?
The biggest reason is because of inventory issues in the past. There's some products that I cannot get through FullScript that patients are on. that they found to be critical for their health. So those are the ones that I have to order for them. Otherwise, we're trying to get patients that are that have an internet ability to be able to purchase them direct. It's just easier on us. It's easier on the staff. And again, it takes out that equation where the labeling thing, and not that I would ever do that again. I think I've learned a huge lesson for losing a lot of staff members and a lot of inventory, and just it was a costly mistake, but also just it was something that I admitted to the staff that I did, and realized that it was a wrong thing to do.
Thank you. I'm curious from a physician who is, you know, as chiropractors, we are formally trained regarding and are therefore accountable for a level of decision making with regard to nutrition that is higher than the norm in healthcare environment. I'm interested in your rubric or your mindset, or what, you know, what goes through your mind when you decide to recommend a particular supplement to a patient, especially one that you derive profit from recommending?
So we have people fill out a questionnaire that's fairly lengthy. And then through that questionnaire, we consult with them, talk to them about what they've had, their goals. A lot of times patients will either bring in labs or we'll recommend labs for them. And then through that process, from a functional approach, offer nutrients that are designed for a program for them.
And thank you. And may I ask, in rough percentages, what percentage of your practice consists of the nutritional side of things as opposed to medicine and manipulation?
The exact numbers I don't have, but...
I don't need exact numbers. I just want to know, you know, is it a third? Is it a half? Is it two-thirds? Is it some, you know, I just would like... I'm not going to hold you to any particular
yeah.
number. I just want to know how big a factor it is in your practice.
I would say at least 25%.
Thank you. Mr. Sherman, my colleagues had other questions I was going to ask.
Okay, thank you. And I'd like to know at this point if the complainant is present with the initials D as in David, A as in Apple. I think there was going to be a schedule conflict, but I wanted to make sure. So if you are present, this is your chance to unmute.
Yes.
Hi.
Yes, David Allen is here.
Okay, so we're going to refer to you by your initials only so that we can protect your identity. So
yes.
So I'm going to call you DA. So this is Dr. Guarino, Chairman. What have you heard that you disagree with so far, and is there anything else you'd like to tell us?
Yes, the attorney states that the explanation is that did not turn in insurance claims, that my wife turned those in, which is incorrect. We had no billing. He never billed us the specifics that the insurance paid in their explanation of benefits. We would have no knowledge of how they would bill or pay accordingly. The explanation of benefits that I provided are clearly after my last day of treatment, and clearly his memory fails, and he seems to think that me and my wife were always together. My wife continued treatment after the 19th of August, so he just billed for her, just pretty much duplicated my wife's billing for me, which was totally fraud.
Okay, so patient DA, I think we heard in the testimony earlier that they said that they did not submit billing to the insurance company. Did you submit the billing and records to the insurance company, or did they?
No, I did not make any billing. After Abrams' attorney refused to take the case, he reduced his treatment. We paid in cash. We had no issue of turning it over to the insurance company. We had no reason to turn anything over to the insurance company. We paid in cash, and it was completed. We did not find out any of this until 2 years later that he had billed. We did get reimbursed because of his billing, but we did not bill the insurance company. We did not provide any information to the insurance company until after we got a reimbursement checks, and I checked the dates. The dates were from dates that I was not present. So we need to actually repay the insurance company.
Okay. So now I'm confused.
Yeah, me too.
So we have, I think, two conflicting sets of testimony there. Okay. Ms. Carvis, do you have any comments at this point?
Yes, just briefly to address that. Again, I don't have specific access to, at least I don't believe I've seen the EOBs that were submitted to the board along with the complaint. But in the complaint summary, DA specifically says, I have submitted the above to Summit Insurance representative along with a copy of the statement of dates. So in the complaint itself, it acknowledges that information was submitted to the insurance company. I don't know if this is a situation where they submitted things to the insurance company as part of a personal injury claim, and then the personal, and then that insurance company ask about availability of health insurance or MedPay or something like that. But I can only state that pursuant to what we said, we didn't even, Dr. Abrams was not even aware that there was health insurance and did not submit direct bills to health insurance. He was treating on a lien. And so that's the only thing I can say about that. And then the only other comment that I wanted to make was about the dates of treatment. We provided sign-in sheets and some documents to establish that the patients were in fact at the office on dates that they claimed to not be at the office. So it could just be a misunderstanding, but we did clear up that they were in fact at the office as indicated in the record.
Okay, thank you. So this is Dr. Guarino again, and board members, I'm just looking at page 23 of 114. It's an explanation of benefits page, and it does look like maybe there was no assignment of benefits, or the checks were made out to the payment for the services provided were paid to the patient. And I don't know how much that matters for our purposes right now, but so I guess my question for my board members is, do you feel like we can deal with this today in an initial action tab, or do we need to continue the investigation to get more information to get to the bottom of some of these billing discrepancies that are pointed out that I'm not really seeing personally right now? Paul?
Dr. Guarino, this is Dr. Kanoff. My feeling is that we handle it today with the information that we have.
Okay.
DA, a question. Did you receive any payment from any insurance company?
That was addressed to me.
You? Pardon me?
Yes.
You did. Yes, I'm addressing you, the question to you.
Did the reimbursement of services, yes. Anything that we submitted to the insurance company was after we got reimbursed. It's impossible for us to have provided any billing or statements. We did not have any billing statements from Abrams to account for the reimbursement. So everything that I submitted to the insurance company was after the fact.
Okay.
in 2021.
And you received payment after the fact? Well,
no, we received payment before we submitted insurance information.
So you're saying the doctor submitted it? Is possible your attorney submitted the bill?
No, my attorney said it did not. It had to have come from Abrams directly.
Thank you.
Okay, so as a reminder, we don't get involved in billing disputes, although if it rises to a level of fraud or something really egregious, of course, we'll get involved. So my main concern is more with the bad decision-making of the supplements and dating them. I'm going to be honest with you, Dr. Abrams, I don't believe you. I don't believe your testimony that you had a shelf full of supplements going back to 2010 and that you didn't sell any of those to your patients. And then you hired a new associate, and then the whistle was kind of blown on you, and then you said, oh, yeah, I was going to go ahead and update my inventory, but I had a new associate there, and so I changed the dates on these so we can keep these around. Why would you keep supplements around for more than a decade and not selling any of those to your patients? It seems like a lie.
Yeah, so good question. You asked about where I kept them. Some of the supplements were kept in the back by my desk in drawers. And so when I was going through and cleaning out inventory, that's where a lot of it came from. It wasn't like stuff was on the shelf sitting there. It was already like homeopathics and things that just never got used in tablet forms or things like that, that been sitting in the drawers for, I guess, that long.
Okay. Board members, other questions?
One question. I did not hear Dr. Knopf's response with regard to his general overview. Dr. Knopf, could you repeat what you said the last time you said something?
I was just responding to Dr. Carino's comment about whether or not we feel like we can handle this today with the information that we have, or do we need to continue to move it forward? And I just said that I feel like we've got, I feel like we have the information that we're going to get at this time to continue forward.
Thank you. So Dr. Garino, I think we have information before us for most things, but the unanswered question is, as you have alluded to, is this, Dr. Abrams, this is the 10th time, I believe, according to our records, that you've appeared before this Board of Examiners. And I have questions about to your credit, admitted that you made a bad decision, but I see a pattern here of issues with boundaries and ethics. And it's one thing to sit through classes and, you know, be able to say that you did, and that's fine, that's great. It demonstrates an effort after the fact of having been discovered. And we do have benchmarking tools to determine whether or not this is an inherent risk factor. I do not believe that we should resolve this today. I think that we should require an EBAS to determine whether we have a deeper issue here with regard to ethics and boundaries. I think it's our responsibility relative to the safety of the public to do that.
Okay, and I'm in agreement with that. This is Dr. Garino. And my recommendation for that, if we're going to go in that direction, would be to do an interim order for the EBAS and not send a formal interview, because we're going to need to get that information and review the results before we consider potential disciplinary action.
May I ask for clarification? Since we are considering three matters together, and it seems like the EBAS concern relates to the supplement issue, could we address whether or not something can be done with 2022-023 relating to DA, as that appears to be a separate issue that may be able to be resolved today aside from EBAS? I don't want to step on toes, but since we are considering multiple matters and it seemed like there was a conclusion that perhaps that 023 was more of a billing dispute. So I don't know if we can carve that out or not. If possible, I would like to.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with that. If the board members choose, we can handle 2022-023 separately, and first two cases together with an EVAS order. So back to 2022-023, do we see this mostly as a billing dispute between the doctor and patient, or does anybody see anything that rises to a level of fraud or anything that we should be involved in? Okay, so maybe we need a motion to dismiss that case.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we dismiss plate number 2022-023. On the basis of no basis.
Okay. Is there a second?
I'm very sorry. I may have misquoted the correct charge. Okay. The billing related allegation.
Yes.
On the basis of no basis to proceed.
Okay, so we have a first by Dr. Bennett and a second by Ms. Paul. Is there any further discussion from board members? Okay, hearing none, you should unmute, and I'm going to call for the question. In favor of dismissing and taking no action, no further action on this, signify by saying aye.
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 Are there any opposed? Okay, the five ayes have it. And so I want to thank the complainant patient DA for participating in this meeting. It very much helps us get to the bottom. We've decided to dismiss the complaint. And so we're going to move back to the previous two cases now, 2022-012 and 2022-013, which relate to selling multi-level marketing products and changing the labels of the expiration dates on the products, more importantly. Okay. So any further questions for Dr. Abrams or Ms. Carvis, or do we want to make a motion from order?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we issue an interim order for Dr. Abrams to take the EBAS examination at his expense in no less than 90 days. Revisit the issue.
Okay, so take and pass, and which parts do we have to signify, or?
I believe that all parts are appropriate, given a review, specifically because when I review the history of the previous nine complaints, there's a broad spectrum of.
Okay, So we have a first by Dr. Bennett to take and pass all parts of the EBAS within how many days?
90.
90 days. And a second by Ms. Powell. Is there any further discussion, board members? Okay, hearing that, I'm going to call for the question. So, again, you'll need to unmute.
Can
those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Are there any opposed? Okay, so the five ayes have it. The board has ordered you to take and pass an ethics and boundaries examination provided by the National Board of Chiropractic Examiners. You're going to get more information in writing from the board office, and if you have any further questions, you can contact them on another day.
Quick point of clarification. Are we going to combine 22-012 and 22-013?
Yes. Okay, so that concludes tab number two, and we're going to move on to tab number five, which is also with Ms. Carvis in the matter of Dr. Roland Sinatra.
Thank you. Dr. Sinatra is also present.
Dr. Sinatra, can you please introduce yourself for the audio record?
Doctor, you're muted still.
We can't hear you, Dr. Sinatra, so you need to unmute before we can proceed.
Let me try and send him a message.
Okay. All right. In the meantime, we can get a board brief.
Improper treatment or unnecessary treatment and improper billing.
Okay, Dr. Sinatra, are you with us?
He is showing up on the screen as Roland, but he's still muted, so I'm trying to get him.
Okay, what's the code? Maybe he can
hear. Oh, there he is. How do
you... Can you hear me now? Can you hear me?
We can hear you now. Okay. Hi, welcome.
Good morning. Sorry about that.
Okay. So, Ms. Garvis, do you have anything you'd like to say on behalf of your client before we get started?
Yes, I do have a couple of comments that I would like to make, and Dr. Sinatra is available to answer any questions. Again, I appreciate the board accommodating my scheduling conflict and allowing us to appear via Zoom and also taking us out of order. So I appreciate the personal accommodation. We believe that this matter amounts to a billing dispute, and we provided a lot of information about the collection issues with respect to this particular patient. Dr. Sinatra encountered a situation that he'd never had before with a personal injury attorney, wherein he was asked to reduce his bill to a certain amount. And in response to that, per his typical practice, he just said, hey, can you kind of send me the breakdown so I know what's being asked of other providers in addition to myself in light of the totality of the settlement, so that I can make a determination if that's appropriate. The attorney refused to provide that information and said, basically, you know, take it or leave it. This is all we're willing to do. There was some back and forth with the attorney about that. They ultimately could not come to an agreement, and the personal injury attorney said, I'm releasing the funds to the patient directly, basically collect from them if you're able to. Because of that, Dr. Sinatra engaged in attempt to collect with the patient. It was at that point in time for the first time that the patient complained that the treatment wasn't helpful or wasn't beneficial. And the patient then stated in writing, which we provided to the board, if you continue to pursue this against me or turn me into collections or keep trying to collect this amount, I will leave a bad review for you online and I will file a board complaint. We believe that that's exactly what occurred here, that the patient followed through on a threat to turn Dr. Sinatra into the board. We believe that the treatment was provided was appropriate, the record keeping and the billing was appropriate, and Dr. Sinatra had the right to pursue collection. It's unfortunate that the patient's attorney was unwilling to provide information and chose to essentially create the billing dispute that exists. But as such, we believe that the matter should be dismissed as a billing dispute. If you have any questions for Dr. Sinatra regarding the treatment or the billing or the back and forth as to attempts to collect when he was not paid by the personal injury attorney, he's happy to address those. Thank you for the opportunity to address you this morning.
Okay, thank you. Is the complainant also present with the initials M as in Mary, L as in Larry? Call out to the complainant again. If you're available, you can unmute yourself and introduce yourself by your initials only, please. Okay, let's proceed. So we'll start with Dr. Knopf this time. Do you have any questions for Dr. Sinatra or his counsel?
Yes, this is Dr. Knopf. Dr. Sinatra, over the course of care, I believe it was around 30 visits, the patient bounced around really very high subjective VAS scores throughout all of those visits. The course of care lasted a few months. What was the decision making in your head to keep progressing with care with this patient over that time?
Basically, he did have high VAS scores, but honestly, in my practice anyway, that's not that uncommon. And, you know, for even the first month or so for somebody to be, you know, in that pain. The other thing that I would point out too is I'm sure we've all had those patients that, you know, are overstating their pain level. you know, on each visit, my personal opinion was that that pain level was a bit inflated. You know, in other words, my interactions with him, I think of a patient that's in a pain level of 10. I've had those patients. and he was nowhere near that. So, you know, we just kind of continued to plug along knowing that, you know, this was probably going to resolve and get better, you know, within that 1 month to 2 month mark. So.
Okay. And then looking at the initial exam versus the re-exam, which I believe was March 9th that was done, just specifically looking at the range of motion, he had improved range of motion for two areas, decreased range of motion from the first exam and three of the motions, and then was even in another range of motion finding, which suggests that, again, there was an improvement. You could even argue that it might have deteriorated between the first and the second exam. What are your opinions on the range of motion findings between those first couple of exams, the first exam and the re-exam?
That would be, are we talking, do we have a date on that for the?
The re-exam, I believe, was 3-9.
Well, yeah, let me look and see if I can pull that. And usually I go off of, you know, whether it be pain level or actual degrees of motion. You know, so on 313, I'm not sure if that was the one, but that was close to the end. He had no pain in any range of motion.
Okay. You know, so there was there's a decrease in pain,
right?
Maybe less flexibility still at that time.
You know, when we first started, you know, if I'm looking at the proper one here in January, he had, you know, mild to moderate pain in every range. By the time we released him, 313, our exam measured no pain or discomfort in any range. I would say, too, also with the re-exam, you know, that was one of my reasons for continuing, too, because I'm seeing, you know, those improvements.
Okay. That's all the questions for now. Thank you.
Okay, this is Dr. Guarino again. I'm curious, you know, we don't normally handle any billing matters, but as I read through the materials, I saw that there was a $61,000 settlement, of which the patient took about a third of that. Were you eventually paid through this or not?
I was not. So that's why I, you know, turned him in over to a collection. To be honest with you, you know, I'm not happy that this has happened, but, you know, I feel like the attorney really is the one that really, you know what I mean, threw a wrench into this whole thing. He basically, a patient hires an attorney to take care of these matters for them. The attorney dumped it into ML's lap, and, you know, and I have not been compensated. No.
Okay. Thank you. Dr. Bennett, any questions?
Yes, Dr. Green. Thank you, Dr. Sinatra. I'm Dr. Bennett. And I agree with you that ordinarily this would not be a billing issue, would not be something that we would normally take up, but the other allegation relating to the standard of care does necessitate further an obligation to probe further, and in so doing, I do have a number of concerns. And as Dr. Kanoff pointed out, we had a consistent high visual analog pain scale ratings. And a couple of things I think are noteworthy here. Dr. Sinatra, you performed quite an extensive battery of diagnostic tests. You did some standard orthopedic tests on one occasion. On following those, you did some muscle grading and testing in a separate encounter. You performed really a pretty extensive battery of testing and retesting. And I note that there may have been some deficits in ranges of motion and so forth, but the strength, the measurement of motor strength, and those kinds of things, full range of motion, in many cases full pain-free range of motion, would you agree were not consistent with the level of the complaint that the patient was presenting with?
Right. Like I said, on a daily, visit basis, I did not feel that the pain level he was reporting was consistent with what I was finding, I guess. I felt like we continued to make improvement, although his pain levels were reportedly high, but also he did not, visually display that to me.
And so the visual analog pain scale rating that you're using, what does 10 represent on that scale?
10 out of 10 would be the worst pain.
Worst pain imaginable?
Yeah.
And so if a patient reported a 10 out of a 10, and then the next day or the next visit reported a 10 out of 10 and said that when you ask him his condition was better or worse, that it was worse, how do you get worse than the worst pain imaginable? What's going through your head when a patient says something like that to you?
Right. That's when I kind of revert to just how they're presenting to me. And so, if they have a smile on their face and they're moving, fairly normal, but they report a 10 out of 10, then I just take that complaint with what it is at that point, I would take it to mean, hey, they're not feeling the greatest, but 10 out of 10 is, like I said, somebody who comes in, with crutches or a wheelchair, crying in pain. So.
And so just not to beat this to death, but was it obvious in your mind, or at least highly suspicious in your mind, that this patient's subjective report of pain was not consistent with objective findings and potentially disingenuous?
That would probably be my opinion.
Okay. And at what point in care did you begin to think that this may be the case as the patient's provider?
There was a point, I'm not exactly sure, but, the more we discussed and his pain levels were high, and even though my objective findings seemed to show improvement, I felt it prudent to refer him. He was referred to Arizona Sport and Spine. They did evaluation and said to continue care with me, eventually leading to, me releasing him in April, I guess it was.
Yes, and that's another point of concern, because what I see here is, I'll circle back in a moment, but I believe your referral to them, to Sport and Spine, was on 3/26. Patient reported on 4/1 again that his patient levels were 10 and worse. His condition had worsened over the previous 10, which would worsened over the previous 10 ad nauseum for a number of visits.
Mm-hmm.
And that shortly after that, and their recommendations were to get an MRI done and rehab. And one visit later, you, instead of doing that, you elected to state that your evaluation indicates that you'd reached maximum medical improvement, that the condition has gotten markedly better, and you released the patient from care. Can you explain your clinical rationale for that?
At that point, the patient had kind of got under care with Arizona Sport and Spine. And as far as I was concerned, my final exam findings, as far as range of motion and so forth, I felt like my work with the patient was probably finished. And so for him to continue with the Sport and Spine, they had done the evaluation and recommended certain things. So.
Okay. And Dr. Sinatra, are you familiar with tests like Waddell's and other tests that are specifically designed to test for psychogenic overlay and malingering issues?
No, I don't. I have not performed Waddell's, but.
Mm-hmm. I asked, well, I see that you have not performed
yeah.
what else. My question is, are you aware, and I'm really speaking to the issue of your clinical responsibility, if you have a patient who, for whatever reason, may be motivated to be disingenuous about their presentation, and they're therefore basically not going to benefit from any care that you provide to the patient. Once that's detected, do you understand that as a provider, you have a responsibility, first, to suspect, and two, to test for, and three, refer for in the case that you believe that's the case?
Yes, for sure. And I looking back over, I feel like that's, you know, kind of the course that we took, mostly objectively. I felt like I'm kind of at a point where the patient is, you know, still reporting pain to me. My objective findings, you know, revealed that I probably was done with the patient. You know, the range of motion, the orthopedic tests and so forth. So that's kind of where I thought, well, you're still having this pain reportedly. And so we're going to get, you know, the sport and spine involved.
All right. And so from your perspective with regard to accepted clinical practice guidelines, such as Croft guidelines, other published guidelines with regard to the acute management of musculoskeletal pain, don't you think that 3 months down the road or 2.5 months down the road after an initial trial of care, a patient continuing to report 10 out of 10 and worse than the last 10 out of 10, worse than the last 10 out of 10, with contradictory objective findings, don't you think you should have intervened on that quite a lot sooner?
You know, I when you're in front of somebody, I guess you make a different decision, you know, because like I said, he did not have the demeanor of a 10 out of 10, and we continued to, you know, show improvement. So we continued with care.
Okay. I have no further questions.
I would just add to that end, it would have, obviously he has obligations to not abandon the patient either. And that's why he sought out a secondary opinion from Arizona Sports and Spine to see if there was something that they would recommend. And they recommended that he come back. But when it was clear that basically it was status quo, or he was not getting better, he wasn't going to report he was getting better, he determined it was more appropriate to let the others and the specialists who had recommended some more specific testing with the patient to take over the care at that point. But as all the practitioners are aware, the subjective pain scale is in fact quite subjective. And as practitioners, you have to use and do a multisensorial evaluation of the patient and see if this 10 out of 10 is actually consistent with what you're seeing and what you're observing. But we believe that the care was appropriate and provided for an appropriate length of time in light of the circumstances and appropriately transitioned rather than just discharging the patient who was clearly still in pain.
Yeah, and Ms. Carvis, I appreciate your comments, if I may. I agree that referral would be appropriate, that abandonment would not be appropriate. However, there are times within the guidelines when those things should occur. There are standard tests and protocols to detect those factors. There are multiple referral options, and I would argue that in this case, those particular interventional steps should have been taken far, far earlier in the course of care, and a whole lot of this would have been avoided in the long run because of it.
Okay, board members, any other questions for Dr. Sinatra? Oh.
Yes, I have one question. Doctor, at any point did you establish a baseline of dysfunction? I didn't see anywhere in the notes where you documented any functional improvement objectively. Do you not do that as a regular practice with your patients? To actually measure progress? In addition to
just
pain, usually function will translate to a pain scale, and that would have brought to light very early that this patient was either malingering or there's an there's something incongruent about him being able to do something he couldn't do before he started treatment.
Right. Just, I would say when it comes to that, it would be our range of motion, the range of motion measurement to see, you know, hey, how far are you able to bend and how much discomfort you're having.
And so it would have helped perhaps to document how that range of motion was affecting his ADLs, or lack of range of motion, I should say. That would have given you a measurement consistently throughout his care.
Right.
Do you ever do that?
Not specifically to ADLs, unless the patient might have said, hey, I can't do this or that, and then we probably would put that in the note. So.
But you don't ask the question?
No, not necessarily.
Thank you.
Okay. So what's your pleasure, board members? What would you like to do at this point? Do you want to continue the investigation to get more information, or do you want to?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that there's insufficient evidence to support disciplinary action. However, I believe that a continuation of the activities that led to this investigation may result in further board action against the licensee. And because of that, a non-disciplinary advisory letter for continuing education be issued, the requirement of 12 hours of continuing education on orthopedic evaluation to include detection of psychogenic overlay and malingering, and that these hours be completed within the next 120 days, and of course at Dr. Sinatra's expense.
Okay, is there a second? Okay, so we have a first by Dr. Bennett, second by Ms. Powell. Any further discussion, board members? Let's call for the question. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Are there any opposed? Okay. So the ayes have it. Dr. Sinatra, you're going to be issued a non-disciplinary advisory order with some continuing education requirements. You'll be notified in mail for that. And if you have any further questions about that, you can contact the board on another day. That concludes your tab for today.
Thank you so much again for the accommodation of letting me appear via Zoom and taking my matters out of order. I really appreciate it.
Great.
Thank you.
All right. So, board members, we're going to go to tab number one. And this one is the matter of Dr. Gregory Charles Bidlack, the formal interview.
Yes. And before we begin, the respondent through counsel denied our request for the formal interview, which places it in a formal hearing stage. I did just hear just now from Dr. Bidlack's attorney, Jeff Hunter, that they will stipulate to pulling back that request for formal hearing, and so the board can remand it to back to investigation and then decide what they want to do at that point, because there are materials that you have not read yet.
Okay.
But if you would like legal advice, you can go into executive session now if you'd like.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Okay, we've got a motion by Ms. Powell. Second by Dr. Bennett.
I'll be recusing myself.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Knopf. Okay, I'm going to call for the vote to go into executive session for legal counsel. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, four ayes have it. The time is 10:10 a.m. You can all stay here. We're going to leave for a little bit, and we'll be back. One, we're out of executive session and back in open session. We are on tab number one, which is supposed to be a formal interview. We have been advised that Dr. Gregory Bidlack has declined the interview, and so he has the right to do that. My recommendation would be that we remand back to the investigative phase. Would someone like to make that motion?
Mr. Chairman, in view of the fact that there are rules to how we proceed and that every step we need to take with caution and due diligence, this will give us the opportunity to serve that need. And so I would move to end this investigation at this time.
Okay. Is there a second? So we have a first by Dr. Bennett, second by Ms. Powell. Any further discussion, board members? Okay, I'm going to call for the question. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Are there any opposed? None. And we have one recused, so four ayes have it to go back to the investigative phase. So we're done with tab number one, and tab number eight is also regarding Dr. Gregory Bidlack. And so we're going to vacate that tab at this point. We will move to tab number three, which is regarding Dr. Robert Bob Martin. Dr. Bob Martin, are you present? If you are, you need to unmute yourself so we can have a discussion.
Did you ask for Dr. Mejia?
Dr. Mejia?
No, we're looking for Bob Martin.
Oh,
hello. Can you hear me now?
Hi, Dr. Martin.
Yes, sir.
Hi, welcome. We've got our executive director is going to go ahead and give us a board brief.
Danger to the health, safety, and welfare, and misleading advertising.
Okay, so Dr. Martin, this is Dr. Guarino. We've got some information that you are advertising on your website that you are Arizona board certified in physiotherapy, and also that you are a chiropractic physician. In this state, we reserve people advertising that they are chiropractic physicians as licensed chiropractic physicians. I understand your license right now is on inactive status with us, but also the term physiotherapy is a protected term by the physical therapist now that we cannot use. And so there's a delineation between certified and physical medicine modalities and therapeutic procedures. But that is not the same as being board certified in physical medicine modalities and therapeutic procedures. So we've got some problems with some of the language as it relates around that. And I'm going to ask my counsel, because he's on an inactive status, where do we go from here?
Well, because he's on an inactive status, if he's not practicing, the board doesn't have jurisdiction to take action against him. But you could recommend or request that he remove the physiotherapist delineation or designation from his bio that goes out here in Arizona. Could offer a cease and desist. You could also issue a cease and desist letter if you think that he is holding himself out as a chiropractor here in Arizona. Or you could also issue a cease and desist order, which has a lot more authority and power.
Okay. And so, Dr. Martin, what are your comments regarding what I just told you regarding the advertising concerns that we have?
Well, that information that's on the website, can you hear me right now?
Yes.
Okay. The information on the website is probably dated, and I would be, of course, obliged to change that to be in compliance with the board's directions.
Okay, we'd appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
Board members, any questions for Dr. Martin?
I have a question with regard to, sounds as though Dr. Martin is quite happy to follow direction. A couple of questions. Number one, in this situation, it would seem like the lightest form of intervention would be the most appropriate. And that, as I understand it from Mr. Monahan's comments, were that would be a letter. Is that correct?
Yeah, you could send a letter if you'd like. Just requesting.
But were we so inclined to do that, the question, we just want to, for the record, Dr. Martin's acknowledgement that we've covered the points here One of those points being, we're not going to tell him specifically what it is that we want him to do. What we're telling him is that we want him to modify his website to be in compliance with state law, and we are not going to interpret what that is other than the letter of the law, and that in the absence of compliance with that, we would be intending to follow up with more significant intervention that would be then a violation of a letter. And my question at that point is jurisdictional. As I understand it, if he is inactive, then we are sort of treating him like Larry down the street, who who's holding himself out to practice as a chiropractor. So if Larry down the street doesn't do what we write a letter to Larry to do, what happens then?
Well, the letter would be just advisory. It wouldn't be disciplinary, wouldn't be non-disciplinary, just would be advisory. And if he didn't follow it, we would have to come back and decide what to do at that point. And possibly that would be, getting an injunction against using that language, actually issuing a cease and desist order. However, there are also questions of whether you can enforce that in Hawaii. I'll take a trip over there if you'd like.
Larry's going to put the bill for that one. So I just wanted to kind of have this dialogue and know that Dr. Martin is hearing this dialogue and then reiterate that with Dr. Martin that he understands that he has just said that he's obliged to change and come into compliance if he's going to not continue to hear from the board. So, Dr. Martin, can I confirm that you understand and intend to move forward as you just said you might?
Yes, I do.
Okay, thank you. I'm fine with that.
Okay, and specifically, the website was the drbob.com under the About section is where we find some of those advertising issues.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so any other questions, board members? All right. So we don't need a motion. Okay. So Dr. Martin, you're going to get a letter from our staff advising you what happened today. And we wish you well and hope you don't have to come in front of our board again. Go ahead, Dr. Bob.
Oh, yeah, and that would be just fine with me.
So that would be any and all advertising, not necessarily confined to the website that was specified by Dr. Guarino, correct?
Obey all laws.
Obey all laws, yeah.
Okay, thanks. That concludes the matter for today. Thanks for joining, Dr. Martin.
Thank you. Have a good day.
All right, bye-bye. Okay, let's go on to, does anybody need a break? We haven't had a break yet. It's 10:30. Okay, we're going to take a 15-minute break. Everybody come back at 10:45, and we're going to continue next with tab number 4, which is Dr. Arthur Mejia. Okay, it's 10:45. We're back in open session off of our recess. We're handling tab number 4 right now. And tab number 4 is regarding Dr. Arthur Mejia and complainant M as in Mary K. We're going to use initials only to protect the complainant and patient's name. Can I please get a board brief?
Patient abandonment, failure to complete continuing education, and failure to maintain adequate records.
Okay. And Dr. Mejia, can you please introduce your full name for the record?
Yes, this is Arthur Mejia.
Okay, and are you represented by counsel today?
I am not.
Okay. So we're going to start with you, and then we're going to ask the complainant a few questions. You're aware of the allegations before us today. Do you have any comments? We have read all the board materials that you have submitted in your response.
I was not aware of any continuation education problems.
Well, it turns out that you are missing 2 hours of record keeping. Are you aware that every even numbered year you're supposed to take 2 hours of record keeping?
Yes. I completed all my record keeping.
Okay. Well, we don't have, for the year 2020, we don't have that information. We have a sufficient number of total hours, but we don't have two of them that qualify for record keeping.
It should be no problem to send you a certificate. Can't verify immediately, but I'm almost positive that I did my continuing education for a documentation for that year.
Okay. When you get a chance, go ahead and send that to the board.
No, I'd be happy to.
Okay. And so we read a discharge letter, and it had your name at the bottom, but it wasn't signed by you. And so I want to know who authored the discharge letter regarding noncompliance and saying that the patient was overweight. Did that come from you or a staff member, or where did that come from?
No, that all came from me. I actually was not aware that it needed a personal signature. I can explain that, though, if you want an explanation.
Sure, go ahead.
So this patient, their dimensions are approximately 5'5" to 5'1", and they're around 300 pounds. And so when they get on my table, which happens to be a three-piece hydraulic Thompson table, they're only distributed over the thoracic and lumbar portions. They do not reach the cervical portion. And that improper weight distribution, the Thompson will simply, it cannot accommodate them.
Okay.
Go ahead, doctor. I'm sorry.
Okay. So there was a complaint also regarding nudity potentially in your office. It looked like in your response that you play DVDs in your office, and there may have been a movie that was playing that had some kind of an inappropriate scene, maybe for an office setting. Do you know where that came from or what that relates to?
No, I would be happy to explain that too. So first, let me explain that, yes, I pick themes for the months and play movies in my clinic. Any movie that I would question as too risque, I consult parents of young children and get their approval. But I'll explain this movie. It's a biography. It's a true story. It's called Into the Wild. It only has maybe 2 minutes, a glimpse of breasts. It is not a profane movie. It's actually rather educational.
Okay. Thank you. I'm going to ask my board members if they have any questions for you at this point, and we'll start with Mr. Turbinson.
Yep. Mr. Mejia, can you hear me?
Yes,
Dr.
I can.
Mejia?
I can hear you. I can hear you.
So is it accurate that upon sending the discharge letter to patient MK, that you did not provide any type of referral or seek any type of referral for the patient?
I did not provide a referral, even though I know that was part of my responsibility, for two reasons. There's a lot of turnover in Yuma, and so I don't know who would be able to accommodate their weight, and so I left that as their responsibility. But also, B, due to the combative nature of this patient, I was almost positive that even if I had provided a referral, that they would not have accepted it. They wouldn't have gone there for wanting to find their own chiropractor. So that's the only thing, understanding the criteria of patient discharge dismissal, that was the one thing I did not fulfill.
Okay. And in reading patient MK's letter dated April 14, 2021, the patient says that her son is also a client of yours. Is that accurate?
Yes, he was not dismissed.
And the complaint says that he weighs more than patient MK does. Is that accurate too?
I really couldn't say. I would have to. He's a large man. He plays offensive line in college. But I really couldn't say because he's in splendid shape, and this MK is not.
Okay. So let me just ask you: was it really the weight issue? Was that the real reason behind the discharge of patient MK?
No, I had to, there had to be legitimate reasons for patient dismissal. So the cancellations, the no-shows, the weight as a detriment to my table because it is necessary for my operation, those were part of the problem, but the primary problem was the way she spoke to me in the last three visits before I dismissed her.
Okay. I guess my issue then with that is your letter does not refer to any of that. So if that was the real issue, I'm not sure why you blamed the patient's weight in the discharge.
I felt like it was relevant to the matter, especially considering that the patient themselves had told me on one of our last meetings that they could not lay on the table anymore because they could not breathe when they lied on it. Okay. So this is a conclusion that I came to, that it was because of her weight and the way that she distributed according to her height on the table.
Okay. I have no further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Turbinson. How about Dr. Knopf? Do you have any questions?
Yes. Mejia? Dr. Mejia, yes. I was going through your patient notes, your patient records. Let's just use this as an example. You said that the patient stated that she wasn't able to lie on your tables any longer because of difficulty breathing or just couldn't be accommodated. Where in your notes would I find that?
You wouldn't. I didn't enter that.
Okay. And what do you think of the overall quality of the notes that you've provided on patient counters?
They could be better. I'll explain. Her chart is from a long time ago. My charts have been revised several times since then. There is information that is missing that I now obtain from newer patients. But when she had been coming for a long time, I didn't want to alter anything because I know that's not legal.
Okay, I appreciate that. So can you describe some of the changes that you've made to your documentation in more detail, please?
Yes. Let me open one as an example. So I revised my SOAP notes just to include more information. I have added a visual analog scale and a patient questionnaire to obtain more information about the chief complaint. And I've revised the orthopedics several times just because I've found that I modify my physical exam. I have probably about four times in my career.
Okay. And that's the formatting of your notes. Are they similar to what has been submitted here, or have you switched to electronic records, or is it still handwritten in the format that you provided with those additional fields?
They're still handwritten with some additional sheets added to the chart now, but they're still pretty much the same format.
Okay. I just want to go back to another comment you made to try to understand it better. You said that her son is a patient of yours, and he's also a bigger individual, but the difference in your mind is because he's bigger and the fact that he's muscular?
He's muscular. He's more slim. He's significantly taller. He's, you know, he's probably about 6'5", 6'6".
And so let me try to understand the issue with the weight. Was the issue with the weight with the table because the drops wouldn't set, or is it because the patient was uncomfortable?
Both. She could not lie there comfortably. And before considering dismissal, I was just going to keep her on there as short as possible. But when the chain of events occurred that happened in the last three visits, I realized it was a legitimate thing to co-claim her weight as a part of dismissal because she can't lay on the tables anymore. And according to her height and her weight, it just, the table cannot accommodate her. It would fall.
Okay. We're going to move over to the dismissal letter. Would you, now looking back at the dismissal letter that you sent, I know Mr. Turbinson mentioned the lack of a referral. Is there anything else that you would change about that dismissal letter that you sent?
I would probably not include the statement about accusing her of not caring about her care, because there's a little bit of speculation in that. But when you hear what she told me on the last three visits, I only come here because of your mother. I don't know why I come here if it weren't for your mother. And then once again, I only come here to see your mother. These were very hurtful statements because my mother is the clinic manager. But the irony of everything is that this individual has not been here in 2 years. She's in the process of semi-retirement. So it just felt like an incredibly disparaging statement to my efforts to help her. And that hurt. Okay, and that really was probably that's what inspired me to dismiss the patient. I was before that willing to overlook the cancellations and the no-shows.
And would you agree or disagree that the tone of the dismissal letter probably could have been more professional?
Oh, absolutely. No, that's why I say I would remove the accusation from that if I could have rewrote it.
And what,
I probably spent way too much time thinking about this whole matter because I did not act hastily. I spent probably about 3 months contemplating if I should keep this individual as a patient or send her.
Right. And what date was the letter sent?
It was approximately 4/8, April 8th of 2021.
And how would we know that?
It wasn't dated? Or maybe no, yours wasn't dated.
Is there a different letter that was sent?
You would have known this because you have copies of the soap notes that have that date of discharge.
Okay, so it's in the soap note is where you discharged it, but there's no date on the letter, which
no,
you agree would be helpful.
Yes, that probably would have been helpful.
Okay.
I didn't even contemplate that, doctor. I'm sorry.
That's all my questions for now. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay, Ms. Powell, any questions?
Doctor, in your notes, you make statements or you document that the patient is in good health. Can you tell me, because in your letter you say you say she has unreasonable health problems. What are unreasonable health problems?
Her mechanical issues and the fact that she would never give me a fair chance to treat them. She has a significant reverse cervical curve to the point where I guess you could say that her chin is resting on her chest. It's a very moderate to severe, what you would call a tensegrity posture. And that is, that's significant.
And what else?
Oh, probably, let's see, I remember when she was not compliant with her knee doctor and she ended up having a knee replacement, well, that hip is going to become problematic at some point in the future.
Did you ever discuss with her a diet to help her with her unreasonable health problems?
Any discussion of improvement, diet, try not to miss appointments and increase your frequency for better progress was met with a combative nature. I don't want to hear this. I'm not going to abide by it. Please don't tell me this.
Do you ever document that?
No.
What are the clinic rules that she broke?
Clinical rules?
The clinic rules. You said she broke clinic rules.
Oh. The clinic rules were that no doctor will appreciate a no-show or a same-day cancellation. I've only just started penalizing patients this year. So throughout her whole career, she left me standing several times. It was not documented and allowed, but it was never appreciated. That was a broken clinic rule. The second clinic rule was speaking to me in the incredibly disparaging manner that she did. And it wasn't just on one occasion, even though it took me two of her phrases to understand the meaning of what she was trying to convey. I just don't believe that when a doctor is trying to help somebody, that you should be spoken to in that manner.
I understand. So you got your feelings hurt and decided to discharge her. That's one of the reasons you're discharging her. Did you ever sit down and talk to her about this?
No.
Have a conversation.
No, that would have been counterproductive. You have to understand the combative nature of this patient.
Okay. That's all the questions I have.
Okay. Before we go to the complainant, MK, Dr. Bennett, do you have any questions for Dr. Mejia?
Dr. Mejia, yeah, this is Dr. Bennett.
Yes.
You, Dr. Knopf asked you about a little bit about your records, and you said that knowledge that the quality of the records were lacking and that you had taken efforts to upgrade those, to make upgrades. When was it that you made the changes with regard to SOAP notes and outcome assessments and orthopedic evaluation and so forth?
Oh, that's very difficult to say. I subscribe to a newsletter with my malpractice, and when they offer one that says you should be including this in your chart or including that, and I also I always consult malpractice for rules, and so I cannot say exactly. It's just that I can assure you that on more than one occasion, the chart that you see, they've been upgraded several times.
Thank you. The reason why I ask is because you made reference to the fact that these charts are very old and so forth, and yet...
Well, hers is very old. This individual's is very old.
Okay. And so I saw annotations as late as October of 2020. So to me, that's not very old.
Well, you did not. This chart goes back. I only gave you the most recent soap notes that were pertinent to this complaint. This chart goes back until January of 2008.
I understand what you're saying. It only emphasizes the point I'm making, and that is that even your most recent records deserve some attention, shall we say. And, you know, I'll circle back to that.
I cannot argue with that, doctor. No, they do. But you're also I can't argue with you what you're looking at needs significant upgrade because we're talking about a chart that was started in 2008.
And
if I could give you,
sir, you'll let me finish.
Sorry, please.
What I'm saying, sir, is that the most recent records one, the most recent of which I see is 10-19-20, are still sorely lacking in multiple areas of record keeping and documentation. And so while I will completely, absolutely acknowledge that these patients date back to 2008, the records that we provide, that we were provided with, aside from an initial admitting questionnaire that was on the 7th of January, 2008, we were provided with records from 2016 forward to 10-19-20. And those are the records from which we are able to establish an impression of the quality of your records. And since we're there, in order to not have to circle back, mm-hmm. There are a number of questions that I have, but my first question is, I'm confused about the ledgers and how the patient was charged. One post-it note says the patient will always be out of pocket, quote unquote.
Yes.
In another case, there was a ledger that suggests that there was a $20 office visit charge for 97110.
I see what you're asking, sir. You're looking at a charge difference between an adjustment of treatment, a chiropractic treatment, or a laser treatment.
Laser treatment. And what code are you using for laser treatment?
I don't use codes. Patients pay out of pocket for that. It's $20.
So your impression at this point is that if a patient pays out of pocket, you don't need to use a service code? Is that your understanding?
No. I just, wait a sec here. You know what? I goofed. No, there is a laser treatment code on the super bill. My apology.
And that code for that is what that you used?
97110-52.
Okay, so that's the incorrect code. I think we've really established the point that all that we need to establish with regard to that. Moving back to this letter that you wrote to the patient,
yes.
And you have already acknowledged that it was unprofessional to the extent, I believe, that you said that you should have removed the speculation part.
Yes.
And when I read a sentence like, clearly your individual sentiment is that you do not care about the health improvements I provide you, since you are always eager to remind me of exactly that. Would you acknowledge that that's not exactly the most professional thing one a doctor might say to a patient,
no,
regardless of their personal relationship?
It is, but it came out from my fingertips on the computer. Maybe that was the one hasty behavior that I demonstrated because of the manner that she spoke to me. I've never been hurt like that before.
Okay. And so is it your opinion at this point in that time that you were justified in you're saying that your comments were unprofessional, but that you feel you were justified in making them. Is that what I'm to understand here?
I don't know about justified. You know, I'm saying that it was an error and I would have admitted that statement. Oh, yeah, there's no justification for that.
Okay. I have no further questions.
Okay, this is Dr. Guarino again, and I want to hear from the complainant with the initials MK. Are you still with us?
Yes.
Okay. So what would you like to say? You've heard the testimony so far. We've read your complaint and the materials you submitted. Is there anything additional you'd like to tell us?
First of all, I'd like to thank you for taking the time to go over this because I just felt like I was at the receiving end of something pretty nasty. I've been a patient with Dr. Mejia since, and I'm not sure if it's since he was a brand new office, but certainly a long time. And yes, I know his mother. That's how I got to be a patient with him. She said he was opening an office, you should come. And I did. And I thought his service was outstanding. We had a very good working relationship. Yes, I am short and fat. I'm 5'3". I do not weigh 300 pounds, but I am definitely overweight. I agree to that. On the other hand, that had never been an issue using his table ever before. I've got a list of things I wrote while you guys were talking, so I'll just run through those real quick. I tend to be a very punctual person. In fact, his mom was his secretary for years, and she knew if I wasn't there 10 minutes early to visit with her that I had a situation. And I know I probably forgot 2 appointments. Honestly, I didn't keep records of that. I'm sorry. It's on my calendar, but that's years ago, so I don't know. But actually, I'm well known amongst my friends and peers as being a very punctual person. I have also given Dr. Mejia quite a few referrals. I knew at the time when I was still a client there, 3 friends of mine used him. And because I loved his service, I thought he helped me tremendously. I wouldn't let him crack my neck because that just scared me. I was creeped out by that, so I wouldn't let him do that. He never discussed my diet. Let's see here. The reason I was having challenges laying on the table is because I had gone through knee replacement surgery, and laying flat on the table like that was just painful on the front of my knee. I was receiving regular laser treatments on my knee because the healing that it gave me was remarkable. As far as my posture being with my chin on my chest, that is a gross exaggeration. I do have a hump on my back I've had since I was a kid. I don't know why I have it. It looks like I have osteoporosis, but I don't. And I was literally just shocked when I received this letter. Not only that, he just one day I did leave his office in tears because he made some comment, and honestly, I don't remember what it was. And I just told his mom, I can't do this right now. And I just left. And so, and he sent me an apology card for that he had written himself in calligraphy. It was lovely. And so as far as I was concerned, all was, I was over it. You know what I'm saying? I'm not going to hold a grudge or anything like that. But I was just absolutely shocked when I got his letter. Not only the fact that the way the letter was written, but how unprofessional it was. And quite honestly, this is going to sound nitpicky, but that it was grammatically horrible. I mean, it was like this man is a doctor of chiropractic and the sentences were incomplete. The punctuation was poor. I was just surprised by that. And so the first thing I did was call his mom, who is my friend, and say, what happened? Why did I get this? And she, yes, was out of the blue. I had just been in there getting a laser treatment, and she had no idea about the letter, and she said she couldn't answer for her son. And I thought about it extensively, and that's when I said, you know what? I'm going to write a letter. And that's kind of my piece that I have to say. I never had issues with Dr. Mejia. The fact that, and this is a he said, she said situation, and I know it's my word against his. You can ask anybody I know. I am not a nasty person. When I have a challenge with someone professionally, I talk about it with them in a professional way. I am not somebody who comes in and rants and raves, never. We had such a good rapport that I would bring Christmas goodies to them, because I appreciated their service. And if I hated their service, A, I wouldn't go there anymore, and B, why would I do that? And so this letter to me was just an absolute shock out of the blue, and I just thought it was way out of line and that I should let someone know.
Okay, this is Dr. Greeno again. And so what is it that you would like our board to do in this situation with this information?
You know, honestly, I really don't know, because I don't know what the protocol is for something like this. I honestly don't know.
All right. So you don't want us to take his license away or do anything like that. You just wanted to let the board know what's happening.
Yes, I don't want him to lose his license. That's not what this is all about at all.
Okay. And did you agree with the statements that he made, that you said some things to him along the lines of, if it wasn't for your mother, I wouldn't be here at all, that type of thing?
I completely disagree with that. I completely disagree with that. In fact, it would be, he would tell me if I got there right on time, he would say, you're going to make me run behind if you visit with my mom. And so that's why I would come a few minutes early to visit with his mom before my appointment. And a couple of times I was chatting with her and he said, sorry, that was my dog. And I don't know what that was about. Anyway, sorry about that.
I'm going to ask my board members if they have any questions for you before we decide what we're going to do in this case, okay?
Okay.
Board members, questions? Paul?
Yeah, just one real quick question. Could you have said anything disparaging about the doctor playfully or jokingly, like sometimes people
do
this? Never. Thank you. That's all I need to know. Thank you.
Mr. Turbinson.
Just one question. First, did you look for a new chiropractor after you were discharged?
I did, because I was looking for someone else who did the laser treatments, and I was able to go see Dr. Montero, and he did the laser treatments for me, and he also put me on his, I don't know what's called, the drop table is what I call it, for adjustments, and he never had any complaints with, you're too heavy to go on this table or anything. Yeah, and here's the other thing. My weight has not fluctuated maybe 20 pounds in 20 years. And so if he had a challenge with my weight, why wasn't that an issue in 2008 instead of all of a sudden?
And was the process of finding the new doctor easy for you, or was it more difficult?
Well, it was a little difficult because there's only one other place in town that offers the laser treatment.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, Dr. Canal.
Thank you.
I have no questions. Thank you.
Okay. So, board members, it sounds like we have some record-keeping concerns. Is there anything else?
Chairman, I believe that... clearly, there are record-keeping concerns. The question of Dr. Mejia makes or points out is that he has made efforts to, he's acknowledged that and made efforts to improve it. I think that, in all fairness, we can, you know, as it said, trust but verify. So we'll give him the benefit of maybe him saying that he did, but I would like to see, as recent records are still wanting significantly that we saw. I am concerned again, we're dealing with what I consider to be a suspicious boundaries issue with regard to this kind of an emotional outburst that is clearly unprofessional towards a patient. We do need to verify the CEs. I believe that Dr. Mejia has been evasive in his answers. And so I believe that we should move forward to a formal interview and require that in the interim that he taken past the EBAS, that we require him to submit records for current evaluation, and that we verify CEs.
I don't know logistically how we can do that. I mean, if we had a record audit, that would be disciplinary, I think. And yeah. So at this stage, we cannot do an interim order for a record audit.
No.
Along with the continuing ed.
Okay. So it would be an interim order to take it past the EBAS to provide updated records.
And chief director.
Tina. I personally think five, because what he's doing with one patient is typically going to be what he's doing with another. Ms. Powell, do you? I haven't made any motions yet. We're just having discussion.
Can we restrict the date range to anything in the last couple of years?
I think the last.
It's a burden on staff.
About 6 months, I think.
Okay, we need a motion to that regard then.
Chairman, I move that we decide what we just agreed upon. I would move that we issue an interim order to take and pass. Pass within 90 days, that the staff expected to subpoena current records in the amount of 10 records reflecting all spectrum of patient types within Dr. Mejia's practice, and that the CEs be verified with regard to documentation.
Okay, is there a second? Okay. Further discussion, board members? I'm going to call for the question. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Are there any opposed? Okay, five ayes have it. All right, thank you to the complainant for your testimony, MK, and thank you, Dr. Mejia. That concludes the matter for today. We're going to continue the investigation, and Dr. Mejia, you'll be getting something in writing from the board instructing you what to do. If you have
okay.
any questions, you can contact the board on another day.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for hearing me today. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you, MK. Okay. We are moving on to tab number six now in the matter of Dr. Thomas Tinlin. Dr. Tinlin, are you present? You are. You need to unmute and say hello. I see you in our, I see your name, but you're still muted. Dr. Thomas Tinlin, unmute, please.
Right there. Okay, can you hear me
there
now?
You are. I can hear you now. Please introduce your name for the record.
Thomas Tinlin.
Okay, thank you. And I'm going to get a board brief, and then our board members are going to ask you some questions, okay?
Certainly.
The allegations are improper billing, failure to maintain adequate records, improper transfer of medical records, and untimely notice of change of address.
Okay, Dr. Tinlin, this is Dr. Guarino. You are not represented by counsel, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. All right. I'll let you have the first word here, Dr. Tinlin. What do you say to the allegations? We've read all the materials and your response.
I'm a little surprised with some of them. I don't know where there's improper billing. I will go back to the beginning of how this thing transpired. Brian, I don't know how to pronounce the last name.
We're not going to use the real name. We're going to protect the patient's identity, and his initials are BB.
That's fine. Anyhow, the husband of the doctor that I was trading services with, they asked me to trade because she had some health issues. Do you want me to go into those? Since we're not naming.
I want you to speak very specifically and relevantly to the allegations of improper billing and record keeping problems. And if you don't have anything to say about that, my board members can ask you questions.
More information. If anybody has improper billing, it's their office. I've asked to speak to the doctor a number of times. He came into my office in the midst of patients, and I'm sitting in here doing notes, waiting for the next patient to go get them and bring them into the treatment room. And he came in uninvited and handed me a bill and said, you owe us this money. And I looked at it and says, no, this is not so. Part of this we do owe because we agreed to trade services. They were billing for things that were never done. So I thought, okay, all fine and well. Everything's done. And then sometime later, and it ended up in February, he served my wife after calling her at work. And then he served her at work to make a point, I think. We went to municipal court over this and they dismissed it. They looked at the charges. They looked at everything and they said, there's nothing here. Just walk away from it. Well, that didn't satisfy him. He wants a pound of flesh for whatever reason, but I think that's the kind of person he is. So I just sat quietly and not contacted him whatsoever. I gave the board what they requested. We printed out a copy of her notes, his notes. He became a patient also. We treated her not a lengthy amount of time, and I don't remember, but maybe 12, 13, 15 times, something like that. I'm guessing, but I have to go back and look because I haven't looked at the chart in months. And I just, because it was a trade out, I never sent him a bill. And the only time a bill was ever sent was when he wanted to go to court. So I said, okay, fine. Then I'll just bill what was done with this patient. And so he thinks that he was never in here with treatment. What I did with this patient is what we billed. We did manipulation of the spine. We did manipulation of the shoulder. We did 8K work on this patient. We did some acupuncture points on her, trying to help the shoulder, based on what 8K findings we found. I treated him a few times. He's not my cup of tea. He's very abusive and abrasive. Not. I'm trying to be kind here. A lot of swearing. That's just him, but that's him. You know, I mean, it doesn't offend me, but the fact is, that's him. And when he left my office that first day, he went out here muttering obscenities in front of patients. I didn't appreciate it. Did I say anything? Nope. I haven't done anything. I haven't approached her board, anything like that. When he presented his bill to us, we looked at it. I took it home to my wife because she was the one receiving services that was the trade out. And she goes, this was never done. There was about $400 worth of services that were done, but he threw an extra $2,500 in there for some facial fillers that were never done. And that's why I wanted to talk to the doctor, his wife, who was doing the procedure, because she sent my wife home saying, your skin is too thin. We can't do this. I'm going to inject saline instead and see if we get some collagen production. That's where we left it. She never went back again because I think it was short. I don't remember the timelines, but I think it was shortly after that is when he came in and presented me with his bill. I said, Brian, this is not so. And no discussion. He doesn't, this is the way it is. And they were charging us again for fillers that were never done. Like I said, that was the plan going forward. The only thing that was done was one day there was saline solution because the doctor told my wife, look, your skin is way thin on this. Let's see how you do with this. Trying to think, what were some of the other complaints he was complaining about?
Let's go ahead and stop there, and let me ask my board members if they have any questions for you.
Sure.
And this is Dr. Guarino. My first question, just for clarification. So the barter agreement, what were skin care services that were performed on your spouse? And so you were accumulating a bill with them that they were keeping track of that was supposed to be exchanged for services in your office. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And then he came in, BB came in one day and submitted a bill. Why would he do that? Did your wife discontinue the services with their clinic?
I think she did, doctor. I think she discontinued because when and she's not here, I can't ask her, but I think she told me again, the idea of the saline was to see if there was some collagen production or something so she could move forward, and there was none. So she goes, I don't think I should do this. So yes, there was some threading that was done. She enjoyed that. She actually enjoyed the doctor. But again, we were being billed for services that were never rendered.
Okay, I need really concise answers out of you, and I need you to answer the questions directly, okay? Just for respect of time.
Sure.
So did you do acupressure on these patients or acupuncture?
They're the same thing. Whether you do
it by laser, I'm asking if you use needles. Did you use needles or acupressure?
Not on this patient. I did not use needles, no.
Okay. So you can understand why they might be confused if you're billing for acupuncture and you didn't use needles on them.
They never asked
me. But I understand what you're saying, that you used acupressure.
Yes, they never asked me.
Okay, and you're saying regarding the extremity.
Excuse me, I did not use needles. That I'll answer. What I don't recall is sometimes I use a handheld laser to do the acupoints. And I can't tell if I did that or if I did some time a Taishin, which is a Japanese pressure needle. So no, but no needles.
Okay.
Sure.
And then you did extremity adjusting on the shoulders, you said?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Board members, any questions? We'll start with Dr. Knopf from afar.
Thank you, Doc. I'm going through patient BB's files, and I'm having a hard time finding any kind of initial examination beyond just doing range of motion tests. Was there anything else provided for that patient?
On him?
Yes, sir.
No, there was some palpation. I always do palpation, but I did not put him through a full neurological and orthopedic. He said he was getting treated somewhere else. He just said, hey, we're going to trade. Let's trade.
Okay, so you felt clinically there was no need for any kind of examination beyond palpation and range of motion.
No, because he wasn't complaining of anything other than a little bit of stiffness or soreness in his neck that he had for a while, and he'd been treating with someone else for a while.
Okay, so then looking at his, I believe it's his wife's records, which have treatment dates from June 7th through August 24th, I see that there were some orthopedic tests performed in the first visit, but I don't see any evidence of re-exam during approximately, what is that, just about 2.5 month period. Is that accurate?
Well, the re-exam is usually muscle testing. We get some AK work on her. But no, I didn't go back to orthopedically. I went basically off patient symptom patterns when I asked him, how are you doing?
So just a VAS scale of 1 through 10 is how you determine how they're progressing, just subjective.
Yeah, well, it is subjective. We ask many times, I don't think it's in the record, how do you sleep? Are you sleeping? Is this bothering you late in the day, early in the day? Do you wake up with it? We ask that to all of our patients quite often.
Okay. It also looks like patient MB's intake paperwork is much more extensive than patient BB's paperwork. Yes. Is that typical?
Right. No, it's not. Well, yes and no, because she was the primary patient that we set up this trade with. He just kind of came in one day and said, hey, I've been treating elsewhere since I don't want to pay them. How about if we just trade me out too? I treated him 2 or 3 times. He says, no, I want you to crack my neck. I'm an activator guy. I go, no, you want crack, go somewhere else.
So
that offended him. And then he came in with the paperwork.
So you didn't find it pertinent to have your arbitration agreement that you had with the previous patient and your informed consent that you had with the previous patient with patient BB?
I'm sorry. I did not understand the question.
Let me bring up in NB's patient record, there's an arbitration agreement that it looks like you have some patients sign, as well as informed consent to care. Now that I didn't see that in patient BB's record.
And I can't answer that. I don't know. I don't know. I know the arbitration, we stopped using the malpractice that we used to have before NCC. They required that with every new patient. He may have started after that when we changed malpractice insurance companies, but I'm not sure.
Okay. That's all the questions I have for now. Thank you. Sure.
All right. This is Dr. Guarino again, and this reminds me why I never do barter agreements. So I'm going to ask
and I'll never do them again. Thank you.
Ms. Powell, do you have any questions?
One quick question. Is it documented anywhere exactly what you're bartering?
I'm sorry. Is it documented anywhere? And I didn't hear the last.
Exactly what you're bartering. What services are you trading?
No. No, no, no. It was just, it was purely verbal.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Turbinson.
So you mentioned that at some point you went through and created the billing record. I'm unclear. When exactly was that you created the billing?
I never sent them a bill ever until we got served with papers to go to the municipal court. So they wanted a complete record. We gave them a complete record. We gave them a copy of the notes, the billing, everything that was done to the, who is it? Maricopa County Court of Justice.
Okay. And I guess my question then is, was the bartering for, you know, the dollar amounts of services, or it was just bartering services?
It was just bartering. Nothing was ever mentioned about that. That was interesting. I forgot this. Let me add this to it. So it was purely the services. So the day that he came in and presented me with the bill, I remember saying to him, I don't think this is how bartering works. Bartering works trade a service for trade a service. And so when I looked at this, the amount, I went, okay, I know this was done, but I know this wasn't done, this larger amount that he was charging. And I said, no, Brian, BB, this is not what we agreed to. And that's when he got angry. He walked out. He said some things in the waiting room on his way out, and that was the last time I think I've spoken to him. But no, there was nothing about this is going to be a certain amount of money. Service for service.
Okay, thank you. No more questions.
Okay, mm-hmm. Dr. Bennett?
Yes, Doctor, this is Wayne Bennett. you just, I heard you just say that created the ledger, and you said the court wanted a complete record, so we gave them a complete record, which speaks to the issue of you know, why we have laws about record keeping and the content of records, so that you never know which record is going to end up in court. So you always create a record that at least someone else, when looking at what you've done in the treatment room, can uh-huh. tell what's going on.
Uh-huh.
Earlier you said I can't tell from the records what I did, meaning yourself.
I don't recall saying that at all.
Well, I wrote it down when you said it, and I'm sure the record will reflect it. And so my point here, Doctor, is that there is no case in which a healthcare doctor of chiropractic practicing within their scope of practice that it's okay for a doctor of chiropractic to create a record that they can't even read themselves and understand what happened in the encounter, irrelevant of whether a board of examiners or a court of law. The records that we're looking at here are wanting, and in a significant degree, and is illustrated by the point that when we asked you about acupuncture and what was done and so forth, You couldn't even tell from your records what you had done. And with that in mind, and to be very specific, well, first off, let me ask you this. What does cervical LPD mean?
LPD? Is that what you're asking?
Cervical. I'm asking, what does cervical LPD mean?
Okay. Cervical has nothing to do with it. LPD is a system with acupuncture, left pelvic deficient or right pelvic deficient. It's how we measure the patient.
Okay, thank you.
Just an evaluation marker.
Okay. And so as Dr. Kanoff brought to the surface, there were really, aside from apparently some muscle, AK muscle testing and so forth that you did during the course of each encounter, which was not documented in the record, there was also no evaluation, formal evaluation, no reevaluations, no functional outcome assessments, no significant history taken, no exams performed beyond your palpation and AK findings. Would you agree that's the case?
Evidently on BB only.
Okay, well, that's good enough for me. We could probably make a case for the other patient as well, but for any patient, that would be something that we would want to know about. And you mentioned in your record therapeutic exercises / modalities performed by Thomas Tinland. So I saw no therapeutic exercises anywhere at any time. Did you provide therapeutic exercises to this patient?
No, not on either one of these patients, no.
Why did you put in your record therapeutic exercises?
I do that with every new patient that comes in. If I do therapeutic exercises or any of that, it's already there. But there was, in this case, was none provided. No.
So what I'm hearing you say is that you had that this is like a pat statement that you might put in a chart saying
if I'm going to do therapy, if I'm going to do acupuncture, if I'm going to do stretching, if I'm going to do any of that, yes.
So the this line that's put in here is what it really probably should say is any therapeutic exercises or modalities performed during today's encounter were done so by Thomas Tinland. Is that what you're saying?
I guess I'll take it out. It's real simple. I can take it out of the slot.
I'm not objecting to whether it's there or not. I'm just trying to clarify what it means, because it implies it's just
a standard thing that I do in my office. If I'm going to do therapy, if I don't, I don't remove it, because there's no record of any therapies being done other than the acupuncture on NB. And the muscle testing and the exam.
Okay. And when you use the term physical modality, are you referring to acupuncture?
No.
Okay. Well, in your
treatment record. No, well, let me answer differently. Are you still talking about therapeutic exercise?
No, sir. I'm seeing your record as 727 under TXP, which I believe means treatment plan, because that's an accepted abbreviation. Physical modalities, : right cervical acupuncture, right shoulder acupuncture. So I'm asking you if I'm correctly interpreting that that you intended to say that right cervical and right shoulder acupuncture are physical modalities.
Yes, then the answer to that is yes.
Okay, thank you. Okay, I have no further questions at this point.
Okay, Dr. Kanoff, go ahead.
Thank you, sorry. Doc, are you licensed in acupuncture?
Yes.
I'm sorry, what was that?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Is that a certificate or a license from the acupuncture board?
Yep, Board of Chiropractic Examiners, acupuncture license number 50.
Okay, so you're certified?
Yes.
Okay. I want to switch now, this is Dr. Guarino, to the complainant with the initials BB. Are you present for us? BB, if you are here, you can introduce yourself by initials only to protect your identity. Okay. All right, so board members, we have other issues here regarding an address change that was not completed. Dr. Tinland's response that he thought that he complied with everything, but our staff did not conclude that was the case. So there's a violation of
address change within 30 days. And then on the 2022 renewal, he didn't put a complete address, including a suite number he was close to. So do you think that this rises to potential disciplinary action and we need more information to continue the investigation, or are we going to deal with this today?
Are you asking me a question?
I believe. Oh.
Doctor, I
know that you would probably like us to drop it.
Yeah, he probably has an opinion about that. Mr. Chairman, based upon the structure of the law, I believe that the action, that the remedial action that's needed is something that it goes beyond non-disciplinary. So we need, I believe that we need to pursue that further.
Okay. And so that might include record audits to demonstrate, and it's not, I'm just thinking out loud now. I'm imagining that you're going to want him to take some continuing education in the areas of record keeping and then demonstrate through perhaps a record audit that he has gotten better at records.
Yes, and I believe that there's a $50 fine stipulated by statute for the administrative issue as well.
For the address change.
Yes. And so I guess I don't see a non-disciplinary pathway, and so I think we should disciplinary pathways are. And does that mean that we move immediately to a formal interview, or is there disciplinary action necessary?
Potentially offer a consent agreement.
Yes, you could authorize Seamus and I to negotiate a consent agreement or the audits and the CEs, and we could offer him a consent agreement, and if not signed within 30 days, forward to a formal interview.
That sounds right. Mr. Chairman, I would move that we elect to move to formal interview with the contingent that the board be authorized to negotiate, the staff be authorized to negotiate a consent agreement that would consist of a minimum of 12 hours of documentation, an audit of a minimum of 10 records, and the payment of a $50 fine. Time element here. 12 hours of documentation within 90 days, and that consent agreement be signed within 30 days. Above and beyond the normal hours normally required for licensure. Precisely that.
Okay, is there a second? Okay, Ms. Powell seconded. I'm going to ask if there's any further discussion by board members only. And hearing none, I'm going to call for the question. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Okay, so the ayes have it. We have five of them. Dr. Tinlin, you're going to be notified by mail what the board decided to do and what the next action steps will be. But that concludes the matter for today. If you have any questions about what happened today, you can contact board staff on another day.
I will do so. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. It's 11:50. Does anybody need another break, or do you want to push on? Okay. We're going to continue with tab number 7 in the matter of Dr. Jed Zastrow. Dr. Zastrow, are you present?
Yes.
I see you. There you are. Okay. And are you represented by counsel today?
No.
Okay. Can I get a board brief, please, Ms. Vanderveen?
The allegations are the use of drugs or alcohol, failure to maintain adequate records, danger to the health, safety, and welfare, untimely notice of a change of address, failure to properly display license.
Okay. Dr. Zastrow, you recently subpoenaed to get us information
I just want to confirm with board staff because the timeliness of that was due on August 29th. Did we get that information?
We have not received the response yet, no.
Okay. And Dr. Zastrow, do you have anything you would like to say before my board members ask you any questions?
Yes. As far as I've just been insanely busy, this is a domestic dispute between me and my ex. I have gotten into my storage unit, which I thought had all my computer work, my old computer with all my patient records. I have found out that that is not there. And my ex threw away my diploma, my license, and a bunch of stuff when I split with her. And she threw away the mail, which is why I never responded. I got a call from Ryan a couple, like a month and a half ago. And I've been harassed and dealing with a bunch of other stuff with courts up here in Prescott. And I've just been crazy busy. So I apologize for not responding, but I found out I don't have any patient records. I have no history of chiropractic right now.
Okay. Were you recently arrested for drug use?
No.
Okay. So you're saying today that you will not be able to comply with the subpoena for records because you don't have access to your database?
I don't know where my computer is that had all my past records. I went from an office to my garage while I was still with my ex. She was a part of all everything. I did not have a hanging up license, but I wasn't seeing any new patients. It was just patients that had still had my number. But everything was accessible until I split, I left, and everything got thrown away.
Okay, so one of the allegations is that you were using alcohol while you were working with patients. Do you deny that?
Yes, absolutely.
So when was the last time that you treated patients?
I have to admit I have seen probably five times in the last year patients since I've left her and moved out of that house and changed my address. And I don't have records for that. And, you know, it's just people who have been trying to get to me, more of a friend thing. So that's on me. I admit to that.
All right. So are you saying that you've worked on some patients and like, and just didn't keep records? Like, friends, family?
Yeah, it's like five since two Februarys ago.
So five different patients or five treatments you've offered?
Five treatments. Five treatments total.
All right. So what is your situation right now? Do we have your current address?
Yes, if it's Brilliant Sky.
Okay. Sounds like our investigator nodded his. Go ahead.
Well, and like I said, I didn't know about this complaint until Ryan got with me in June, I think, is the first time he called me. And I was turned upside down. I had never heard of it. So if there's a record of who signed for a letter that you guys sent last April, I would love to have that in my case.
Okay, we don't need that. Okay, so board members, do you have any questions for Jay-Z or for Dr. Zastrow right now before we go over to the complainant, if the complainant's available?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Zastrow, this is Dr. Bennett. and maybe this is also a question for the board. As I recall, there was a record of you were tested positive for substance abuse in July of 2022. Is that correct?
Yes.
And what were the circumstances surrounding that?
I'm not exactly sure what you're asking. why did I get tested?
What were you tested for? What tested positive, and what were the what was happening in your environment to precipitate that?
Well, I made a stupid decision, and I thought I was doing something else, which is not good. But I ended up, it was methamphetamines. And I did use for a little bit, and that's on me. I was not seeing any patients. It was never in my house. It was never around me, not in my car. And my ex found out about this, and I think she set this whole thing up. She drugged our dog, saying it was my fault. I have a timeline that says there's no way it could come from me. It, the dog was in her possession. It's this whole thing, but she filed based on that, which is the court I've been going through. Also, CPS has been involved. I haven't seen my kids in 5 weeks. It's and all because she found out that I used for a little bit of time. And I'm right, clean. So I'll take a drug test right now. Bring it on. I have no issue with that.
Okay, well, our concern is, you know, the not about a dog that's tested for positive for methamphetamine. It's that a doctor of chiropractic has. And did I understand that you said that the first you heard about all of this was when you heard from Ryan a couple of months ago?
Yes. So, about this complaint? Yes. My ex has been calling my other work. She has been harassing me, my family. This has been ongoing. I've known she has been trying to ruin me. Okay. I just didn't know about this complaint because I went through a whole renewal process with no issues. And I'm still in disbelief that that could happen, that I had a complaint on my license and it didn't get flat. I had no notice of it except for whatever she threw away, because I was not living
there. All right, I hear you, but my question is this. I'm looking at an email that is dated March 2021, Jackie Cannell of our board, suggests that you were aware of this prior to our investigators, your report of the first contact a month and a half ago.
Okay, so you said in March of 2021, a month and a half before that, I was in contact?
No, sir. I'm saying that you're stipulating that the first you knew of this was a month and a half ago. I'm saying that a year and a half ago, there's an email to our board investigator relative to this matter. So how is it that you can feel, you can state that you were not aware of it until a month
ago? The email was probably the complaint, which is my ex. She said she remained anonymous, but you guys sent me a letter with her name, and I know it was her.
All right, fair enough. Okay, I actually have no further questions.
But I did not send any email to you. I can promise you that. And it was February 24th is the last day I lived with her.
Okay,
2021.
Okay, Mr. Turbinson.
I just had one question. You referenced other work. What is it that you do for your other work?
I work as a grocery manager at Fry's.
Okay. Okay, thank you. That's it.
Yeah. Okay. So I want to make sure we do everything right here. Is the complainant anonymous or not?
The emails provided with the complaint show that she no longer wanted to be anonymous and that she would come forward. But there is no telephone number, and I've emailed, and correspondence back has not been good.
Okay, so she's not part of the meeting today. We're not going to hear her testimony.
Okay. Not unless she came without letting us know.
Okay, well, let me call out to her quickly. If the complainant with the initials JZ is present, we'd like to hear from you. JZ going twice. Okay. All right. Board members, any other questions for Dr. Zastrow?
Yes.
Anybody think maybe? Oh, Dr. Knopf, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Just one more. Dr. Zastrow, what do you want to stay licensed? Do you still want to provide chiropractic care to patients? Is that something you're interested in, or is that just something you don't want to do anymore at this point?
Well, I let my license go for a year and a half at one point here in the last couple of years when I kind of transitioned into retail. And when I wanted to get back into it, you know, because things changed, you change your mind. And I saw, I redid all the CEs that I needed to do. I did all the work, but I saw if you let it go for 2 years or 3 years, I forgot what it was, there is a lot more to do. And so I always told myself, I don't want to let my license totally go because I got to retake the board. I got to do, there's a bunch of other things. You know what I mean?
Okay.
And so even though I'm not seeing patients, in a year, who knows?
You know, understand.
In 2 years, who knows? So.
That's all I have. Thank you.
That's where I thought.
Okay, so we have a licensed practitioner who's admitted that he's tested positive for crystal meth. We've got accusations about alcohol use. Does anybody think that we should do substance abuse eval maybe forward to formal interview or interim order first and could just continue the investigation?
And you could always offer an ICA not to practice in the interim. The drug test was just beginning of the month.
Very fresh. And would a summary suspension be part of what you're contemplating?
We have not heard from the respondent yet. I mean, from the complainant yet. And if she chooses drug test, that we would be going.
So then we would move forward to... Oh, that's right, as previously discussed.
So it would either, sorry, I'll say that again so it's on the record, an interim order for a substance abuse evaluation, if you want to do that, or we could do an interim order for drug testing and have the results sent to the board and then bring this matter back and issue an ICA, an interim consent agreement to not practice.
No.
Oh, no, that's right.
You had to offer it.
So we could offer it, yeah.
And what if we wanted both testing and an evaluation?
Do that.
And you could wrap it into the ICA.
Okay, so Dr. Zastrow, it sounds like you want to keep your license, and we're trying to find a path to keeping the public safe. And so what we would like to propose to you and see if you're agreeable to, would you be willing to abstain from drugs and alcohol, take a drug test, get evaluated by an addictionologist who's going to make a determination about your drug use, and agree to not practice while we're getting the results of those tests back so that we can bring this back in another day and make sure that you're safe and everybody else is safe.
That sounds simple enough. Where does the addictionologist come from?
It would be a board-approved physician that would do that. So you would have to pay that cost, and you would have to get an evaluation from them. Okay. And if you pass that, we know that you're clean and we can move forward from there.
Okay. Is that a drug test or is that like a psychiatric
test? It's a chemical, dependence test, drug test.
Okay. Yeah. Is that okay. I got to go to Phoenix for that, or you got someone up here? I'm up in Yavapai County.
You're going to pick from a list of whoever's convenient for you.
Okay. All right.
Okay, so I'm gonna look for a formal motion then from my board members to make that happen.
Suppose you don't want to just move to make that happen. And to abstain from.
I did not hear any of that.
All right, so I'm I move that we what's the format that we're doing? Interim.
It'd be an interim consent agreement, not to practice.
Kind of an odd hybrid, isn't it?
It is.
I move that we adopt an interim consent agreement and authorize the. Staff to are the staff going to together this interim consent agreement? Okay, so we're instructing staff to negotiate an interim consent agreement with Dr. Zastrow that would consist of abstinence, of undergoing a substance abuse evaluation, to undergo drug testing, all at his expense,
and not practice.
During the process of this investigation.
That would be abstinence to that'd be abstinence to the drug test or abstinence to practicing?
Hold on, let us continue. Dr. Zastrow, you're gonna get notified by mail all the details of this, okay?
Okay.
Practice and consumption of illegal substance.
Yes. Within 90 days?
Yes, within
90 days. Okay. Okay. So, is there a second? All right. We got a first by Dr. Bennett, second by Ms. Powell. Is there any further discussion amongst board members? Clarification needed?
When would you like that signed by? You're saying you'd like him to take the evaluation within 90 days. When would you like that agreement signed by?
Within 30 days.
Within 30 days? Perfect. Thank you.
I think that's right. I think this is somewhat emergent. I think 15 days is.
Okay. I'm going to call for the question. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? None opposed. Okay. Five ayes have it. So there will be an interim consent agreement offered to Dr. Zastrow. You're going to get the information in the mail, Mr. Monahan.
Would you mind, I don't want to put us in a position where we have to then come back here with nothing if he chooses not to. Would you like to then say if not signed within 15 days, then the interim order for substance abuse evaluation and drug tests will become effective? Board can, because the board can order it if he's not going to sign the CA.
Would we do that, or would we need to hearing?
We would still need the evidence, so we would need him to go take that evaluation.
Yes.
So, I think you could just make another motion. I don't think you need to amend it. You can just say if the consent agreement in the previous motion is not signed within 15 days, then the board will issue an interim order for substance abuse evaluation and drug test effective immediately.
Okay. Is there a second? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Okay. The ayes have it. All five. So we're done for today. Dr. Zastrow, thank you for participating in the meeting. And if you have any questions, you can contact board staff on another day.
Thank you.
All right. Moving on to...
Actually, could we have like a 10-minute recess?
10-minute break? Okay, 10-minute recess. It's 12:10. Everybody come back at 12:20.
Can we?
I think I'm asking the same question. If we're here for continuing education, are we done?
Yes, the board is dismissing all attendees that are attending for their continuing education credit. You can be
dismissed.
Thank
you. Thanks to the board.
But why would you want to leave? Okay, back in open session at 12:22 p.m. Our next tab is tab number 9 in the matter of Dr. Holly Hyatt. Have a brief or an update.
Would the board like to go into an executive session to discuss this matter? Your motion is going to be pursuant to 38431.03A4, which is holding an executive session for the purpose of discussion or consultation with attorneys in order to consider its position and instruct its attorneys regarding the public body's position regarding contracts that are subject of negotiations and pending or contemplated litigation or in settlement discussions.
Is that your motion, Dr. Bennett?
That's the very one.
Okay. Is there a second to go into executive session?
I'll second.
Okay. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Dr. Green, I'll be recused.
Okay. Thank you. So we have four ayes, and we will move into executive session at 12:23 p.m. And I'll stay here. We'll be back. Okay, the time is 12:43. We're back in regular open session, and we are on tab number 9 regarding Dr. Holly Hyatt on retired status. The purpose of this being on our tab today is not to rehear this case. It's how we're going to proceed and move forward. She had appealed the... I'm sorry.
I'm a friend of Dr. Hyatt, and she said she was very briefly, she was just going to see a patient. And could, is there any way you could push it back just a little bit? Is it possible?
No, and it's not necessary for her to be here today. We're not hearing her testimony today.
Oh, okay. Okay. Sure. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Thank you. Okay. So, board members, the judge ruled and remanded this back to us to decide what kind of action we wanted to take at this point. What's your pleasure? We can offer a consent agreement and go back to the normal investigative phase of this.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I would move that we remand this issue back to initial review and offer a consent agreement that would include a non-disciplinary order that memorializes the content of what's already occurred and not add any additional components, just document what has already occurred in the past. That consent agreement need to be signed within 30 days. Otherwise, we would just proceed to initial, as anticipated, to remand initial review.
Okay. Is that a motion?
It is.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay, we got a second by Mr. Turbinson, first by Dr. Bennett. Board members, any additional comments? Okay, I'm going to call for the question. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? So the ayes have it. There were four of them. Dr. Knopf is recused. Dr. Hyatt, I see that you're there now. The board is going to offer a consent agreement for you, and you'll get details in the mail. And if you have any additional questions about the board action today, you can contact board staff on another day after our meeting tomorrow or whenever you want to.
Okay, well, I mean, do I have the option of, I do not want to agree to a consent agreement. So is it possible to move forward with a decision whether or not to move forward with the investigation, a reinvestigation, because I will not sign a consent agreement.
Okay, so the board is, if you don't want us to offer it, we don't have to, but so the board then will take this, remand it back to the investigative phase, and you'll be back on our agenda on another day.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thanks. Okay. Moving on to licensure tab number 10 in the matter of Joshua Baldwin, D.C.
Hello, everyone.
Hi, how are you?
Wonderful, how are you?
Great. Intervene.
Dr. Baldwin has submitted a complete application for licensure by examination and PMMTP. He graduated from Parker University on September 7th, 2007. He held an active license to practice chiropractic in the state of Illinois. However, the license expired on July 31st, 2008. According to the document submitted to board staff, Dr. Baldwin has held no active license in another jurisdiction since 2008.
Okay. Dr. Baldwin, what would you like to say on your behalf, if anything, for my board members asking any questions?
I have nothing to say.
Okay. Board members, what's your pleasure?
Mr. Chairman, I believe the appropriate protocol for this would be to order spec passing of a spec exam. Basically the passing of the spec exam and contemplate whether we would want to see additional hours. I'd be curious, Dr. Baldwin, what is your current status with regard to chiropractic education, continuing education over the last, say, three-year window of time?
Yeah, there has been none.
When was the last time you did any kind of chiropractic continuing education?
The last year, I believe, was either 2015 or 2016.
So we're looking at, you know, more than 5 years, fair amount of water under the bridge, things move forward. We may even want to contemplate some additional hours. I don't know what the appetite of the rest of the board members are, but certainly a spec and potentially other hours.
Okay, so I'm just thinking out loud right now. So that would be grant a license contingent upon the spec passing of the spec exam and what, not practicing until that information is received, or.
And my concern as I think about this with regard to any additional requirements is that the spec exam does not reflect kind of an evolving environment with regard to clinical documentation and kinds of things. So that's why I kind of am leaning towards requiring some additional hours that are specific to case management and documented clinical documentation.
Doctor, what have you been doing the past few years? Have you been in the healthcare profession at all? Have you been working in any capacity in healthcare?
I have not. I've been taking care of my family out of state, and I'm just ready to get back to it now.
And so what's your plan once you get your license? Are you planning on working for somebody or opening up your own practice? What are you planning on doing?
I waffle back and forth between the two. You know, they both present their pros and cons, but right now I'm probably leaning more towards starting my own business.
Okay. Do we have a motion?
An agreement for licensure. You want to name the terms, and then you also want to state the time frame in which it needs to be finished.
Would actually be a consent agreement, or is it would just be a failure to or a consent agreement? So make licensure contingent upon
the
completion of. Okay, so I would move that. We offer a consent agreement that would make licensure contingent upon passing the spec exam and completion of an additional 12 hours of clinical documentation and case management, all to be completed within the next
6 months last time.
6 months. That's kind of what I was thinking anyway. Okay, yeah.
Okay, is there a second?
You can ask him if he's willing to enter into that. Otherwise, it may not be worth it. Or to even offer it.
Dr. Baldwin, did yes. You hear what we just said? We're considering, you know, offering you a consent agreement for licensure that would include you taking the spec exam, which is a basic clinical competency exam for someone who's been out of practice for a while.
Sure.
You have to take and pass that. You'd have to take 12 additional hours in documentation and in case management to make sure that you're up to speed on documentation. And contingent upon passing those, then you would be granted a license.
Okay.
And you'd have to do that. Well, and you would have to do that within 6 months. So you can do it sooner, but we're giving you that time frame.
Is the spec exam in person or online?
I think it's online, but I'm not exactly sure.
Okay. And contingent upon all.
Okay. So if you're agreeable to that, we've got a motion on the floor. Do we have a second? Okay. Any further discussion, board members? Okay. Hearing none, I'm going to call for the question for the consent agreement. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Are there any opposed? Okay. We have five ayes in favor. So we're done for today, Dr. Baldwin, and you will be notified by the board with what you need to do.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. We're going to go on to tab number 11, Dr. Sydney Bickmeyer. Ms. Vanderveen.
Dr. Bickmeyer has submitted a complete application for licensure by examination in PMMTP and has graduated from Life University College of Chiropractic on 9/26 of 2020. In reviewing the application in the declaration section of the application, Dr. Bickmeyer answered the following questions in the affirmative. Question number 35 regarding had you ever been arrested, charged with, indicted for, or under investigation for a misdemeanor or felony requiring resolution in the courts? She answered in the affirmative. On question number 36, A through E, have you ever been arrested? Have you entered into stipulation or settlement agreement regarding any offense, misdemeanor, or felony in any state? Have you ever been convicted of any offense, misdemeanor, or felony in any state? Have you ever been convicted of any offense, misdemeanor, or felony in any state? Have you pled guilty to any offense, misdemeanor, or felony in any state? Or have you ever pled nolo contendere to any offense, misdemeanor, or felony in any state? She answered in the affirmative. Answer question number 37, have you ever been evaluated, treated, or counseled for alcohol, drug addiction, or as a condition of a court order, stipulation, or agreement, including motor vehicle proceeding? She answered in the affirmative. The offenses were reckless driving, driving with an unlawful alcohol level, speeding 69 miles per hour, and an open container.
All right, thank you. Board members, any questions for Dr. Bickmeyer?
Dr. Bickmeyer with us?
Yes.
Hi, I'm here.
This is Dr. Knopf. I believe I see a joint logo, so I'll recuse myself.
Okay. Dr. Knopf is recused. Dr. Bickmeyer, do you have anything you'd like to say at this point?
I can explain the incident if you would like. It's up to you.
Well, we've read all the materials, but if you have anything additional to give us comfort that this isn't going to be a problem and trickle into your practice.
Yeah. I mean, it was a dumb, embarrassing mistake. That I regret, but it did get reduced to reckless driving, being that I did everything that was court ordered, got evaluated, all of those things.
The one-time thing, no previous history?
Correct.
I move to grant licensure contingent upon the payment of all appropriate fees.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay, second by Mr. Turbinson. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Are there any opposed? We have one recused, so we have four ayes. All right, congratulations.
Thank you.
We're going to move on to tab number 12 now. Marianne Eaton, D.C. Vanderveen?
Dr. Mary Ann Eaton has submitted a complete application for licensure by examination. She graduated from Palmer College of Chiropractic on 10/21 of 2005. She has held a license to practice chiropractic in the state of Nevada. However, the license expired on 12/31 of 2018. According to the documents submitted to the board, Dr. Eaton has held no active license in any other jurisdiction since 2018.
Thank you, Dr. Eaton. Do you have anything you'd like to say?
I welcome any questions.
So your most recent license was in Nevada in 2018?
That's correct.
Okay. We're about 4 years out. Anybody think a spec exam is necessary or not so much?
But Dr. Eaton, when was the last time you did any chiropractic continuing education?
I'm sorry, what was the last part of your question?
I'm sorry, when was the last time you did any chiropractic continuing education? How recent is your last encounter in terms of education?
Probably late last year. My husband is also a chiropractor, and we had our practice together in Las Vegas. So I attended all the continuing education courses with him when he was doing in-person courses. And I always joined him because we ran the practice together in any online course education as well, so that I could stay on top of everything for the health of our practice.
So is it correct for me to assume that you have been involved in the practice, in the administration of a chiropractic practice, but not as a provider until recently?
That's correct.
Okay. I think that's helpful to know. Preferences.
Okay. Is there a motion?
I move to grant licensure with the contingent upon documenting current CEs in compliance with Arizona law and that all fees be paid.
What do you mean contingent? You mean approving what she's done recently, or?
Well, in order to qualify for Arizona licensure, there's a minimal number of continuing education hours that are necessary, including documentation in even number of years. I'd like to make sure that we know that that requirement has been met. I'm not as inclined because she has been actively engaged in the practice and has.
So she provides 12 hours of continuing education certificates to board staff, including 2 hours of documentation, then board staff could grant licensure. Is that what you're stipulating?
Assuming fees are paid, yes. That's the intent of my motion.
Okay. Is there a second? Any further discussion? Hearing none, I'll call for the question. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, we have 5 ayes in favor. Thank you. Okay, we're going to move on to tab number 13 now. Rulon Kasich, D.C.
Mr. Chairman, I'll be recusing myself from this tab on the basis that I was one of the examiners on his Part 4 exam.
Okay. Dr. Kasich, are you here? Okay. I don't think that Dr. Kasich is with us. So, board members, what's your pleasure? So he passed the Part 4 exam. He just failed it the first time he went through.
That's correct.
Yeah, I would make the motion to grant licensure upon payment of appropriate fees.
Okay. Thanks, Dr. Knopf. Is there a second? Okay. Any further discussion? All right. I'm going to call for the question. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay. We have one recused, Dr. Bennett. So 4 ayes say yes. Let's move on to tab number 14, Charity Lenhoff. See?
Yes,
hello,
I
Dr.
Can.
Lenhoff. Hi. Okay. Can I get a update, Ms. Vanderveen?
Yes. Dr. Lenhoff graduated from Cleveland University, Kansas City on 4/21 of 2017. She currently holds an active license in the state of Missouri, which expires on 2/28/2023. There has been no disciplinary action. When On her licensing application, she answered question number 22, have you ever failed part four? She answered in the affirmative. She passed part four on 5-1 of 2018 with a score of 435. On question number 36A through E, do you need me to read that one again? Thank you. In 2010, the case number was not found, but it was possession and paraphernalia misdemeanor charged with community service. Then the second case is a speeding ticket for 6 to 10 miles per hour, another speeding ticket for 11 to 15 miles per hour, and then failure to display plates on vehicle, registration violation, and invalid plates. That's all.
Okay. Dr. Lenoff, what do you say to that? You know, we've got big problems with people who are unregulatable, and you've got history of things that have gone wrong here. How do we know that you're going to abide by the statutes and rules of the state of Arizona relating to chiropractic when you have not done it for all these other reasons?
Sure. As far as the initial charge for paraphernalia, that was a significant amount of time has passed. And I have not been of use of such substances. And so I've, you know, proved character in there. I since then also have tried to do better time management so that I don't need to speed and I can abide by those rules. So I, you know, have actively been trying to, be just, more active in my own life. I was very stressed and doing different things and not finding appropriate times to follow these simple rules of the that was needed of me. And that's, you know, no longer happening. I'm moving into a brand new location with a whole new group of people that, have been supporting me and helped me to stay focused. So I have very high faith in myself, and I understand where you're coming from of being nervous about that, but I don't know, in my defense, I think most of these things are pretty small rules that I've broken besides the initial one that was 2010, I believe.
Okay, board members, any questions?
I really struggle with this. I mean, the infractions here, and four of them have to do with license plates. I don't see that as necessarily as a function of substance issues or lifestyle issues. I just am seeing a repeat pattern of lack of professional diligence or appropriate diligence. You know, I'm a little concerned about it, and I'm not really reassured by what I'm hearing. I'm sorry, but that's just how I feel about it.
Okay, other board members?
I can understand what you're saying. A part of this was through COVID, and doubled my practice and I got lost in the sense of that. But again, I've had multiple violations of that law. So, I take full responsibility for it. I don't think that my practice as a physician should be solely dependent on if I can get my car license necessarily. I do understand that, you know, it can be a pattern, but I have proven diligence in my chiropractic education, my dedication to my patients for the last 3 years. And I am moving to a new state to continue bettering myself and to continue being the best doctor and person that I can be.
So, past whenever we had somebody that we weren't quite sure, you know, they tell us one thing, they tell us they've changed, their record says something different, you know, we might include an order for an EBAS to get a
another opinion, evaluation on that, you know, or you could deny, or you can do something else today.
This is just an attorney, Seamus Monahan. I do want the board to be careful in weighing in on EMV issues as they don't relate to patient safety or her conduct in the practice. I understand. I completely understand what you're saying. I'm not trying to take away from it.
Okay. I make the motion to grant licensure pending all fees are paid.
I'll second.
Okay, we got a first by Ms. Powell, second by Mr. Turbinson. Any further discussion? Okay, let's call for the question. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Okay, none. Congratulations. Dr. Lenhoff, you'll be given a license.
Thank you so much.
All right. Step number 15, Dr. Pedersen. Hello. Can you please unmute the microphone and just introduce yourselves for the record?
Karen Pedersen.
Good afternoon, Chair Guarino, members of the board, Flynn Curie, counsel for Dr. Pedersen.
Hi, thank you. Ms. Vanderbeen.
back at the April 19th, 2022 board meeting, the board voted to begin the process of denying the reinstatement application for Dr. Karen C. Pedersen based on AAC R47503K2.
Okay. Mr. Curie.
Yes, Chair Guarino, members of the board. We provided Ms. Gillum in response the reasons we think the reinstatement must be granted at this point. Very specifically, first and foremost, if we just accept that this regulation is permissible, very much time barred. We provided the time calculations for you. This application was submitted in November, and the regulation clearly states the board has 25 days, business days from the date of receipt if it's going to provide notice of a denial. It did that, I believe, 108 days after the fact. So it is effectively time barred, and that's by itself should be dispositive of the fact that she's met all the requirements and the board did not give her proper notice under the regs. But more specifically, the way this reg reads is it is not does not match the statute. So I don't want to get too far into the mechanics of administrative law, but the board is only given the authority through the legislature, and the legislature has set forth for you what your ability to grant reinstatement is. And it has very limited requirements. You show proof of the CEUs, you show proof that you've paid the reinstatement fee, and you show everything else that's listed in K2. What's not listed in K2 is anything about discipline. And so the board's attempt to utilize or belief that it can utilize a nursing board discipline as a basis to deny a reinstatement is simply not supported by this statute. And so if the board were to move forward, it would be acting outside of its scope. The other thing that the board does need to take into account is the fact that the nursing board has exclusive regulation over nursing functions. This board does not have regulation over that. And so you would be creeping into jurisdictions of other boards. And one of the problems you have with that is there is both case law and statute that explicitly says that you are not allowed to go into an industry that's regulated by another industry. And so you would essentially be performing a nursing law enforcement function through the chiropractic board. You know, overall, I'm going to re-urge my request kind of globally on this whole situation with this licensee. We want to resolve this with the board. We did not anticipate that in April the board would attempt to deny the reinstatement. And I don't think it was based in the statute or the regulation. If the board does go forward, I think it does open itself up to a lot of other issues, including a GRC review by the governor's council, because I think your regulation is essentially a covert statute that is not supported by the law. And so I think we are going down a path that we don't need to go down. We can get this resolved. I re-urge our request once again, as I have in every single letter and every single email I've sent, this can be resolved. And I'm a little surprised that we're having to go down this side path of a reinstatement discussion for a statute that is really meant to be ministerial and is meant to allow someone who's fallen out of compliance to reinstate with a very limited number of requirements.
Mr. Monahan, I'd like to bust into executive session. Get legal counsel. Is there a second?
Second.
All right, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. Hearing none, the ayes have it. We're going to step away and get legal counsel. We'll be back in just a few minutes. Thank you. Back in open session. Okay, so we don't agree with your timeline of how things have happened. So I'm just saying that, and I'm not going to get into all the nitty-gritty details of all that, but I want to know, what do you want? What is your intention? Do you want to go back into practice? How you've had record keeping problems in the past with this board that go 20 years back. The board in its wisdom back then tried to give you a path to demonstrate that you could treat patients safely and document it appropriately to put them at ease so that the public would feel safe. You went on a disability status. The board tried to work with you for decades. In and around the time when the nursing board had issues with them, you stopped renewing. We saw that as potentially somebody who's dodging us and trying not to report that they are potentially in trouble with another board being investigated. It wasn't confidence building. You've tried to get your license back, but in the past you've told us that you still aren't looking to treat patients. And so if you were to get a license back, and how would we know that you're going to be able to document and treat patients appropriately? Are you even trying to do that, or are you just trying to keep your license from disappearing, or what is it that you want from this board?
I would like my license reinstated, mainly because I'd like to practice chiropractic at some point. It has been an issue with my low back because I had osteomyelitis and a surgery.
Okay.
There was a lot that happened in that time. So I don't think that the nursing board issue has anything to do with it whatsoever.
Okay. So to me, it does, and I've articulated this in the past, and I reject the argument that any kind of elder healthcare license has no impact on what we do here. You are on a probationary disciplinary status with the nursing board, and I've told you in the past, if you came before us as a new applicant, I would be a no vote to even issue a license in the first place on the grounds of what's happening with some of that. Okay, but for today's purposes, we need confidence that if you're trying to come back and you're going to practice, you know, would you be interested in having a license that would require you maybe an order to have been taken past a spec exam? Would you be able to treat patients, to provide us with a record audit so that we can see that, you know, that you are doing what you're supposed to be doing and doing it in a safe way is one of my questions. Or would you just want to go on an inactive status? If you go on an inactive status, you're not treating patients anymore, and it's not a disciplinary event.
If I was inactive and I decided to be active again, what would that require, what you just mentioned?
You'd have to apply for reinstatement at some point when you feel like you're ready to, and then you would still probably have to take a spec exam and do all the things that we need to know that you're safe.
May I have a moment?
Sure.
When it's green, it's on. Okay.
Can I defer to my colleague on this? What's the vehicle that this would go forward if she were to accept an active status? I think they would grant reinstatement and then have to offer something, or can they just offer an active at that point?
Well, I think the best way to
sure, and as long as the data bank, it's not a data bank hit and it's non-disciplinary, I think that makes sense because it allows everyone to kind of catch their breath and then come back to this when it's appropriate. So if you were to offer that, I think if she would give it, obviously we give it significant consideration.
Okay, and another option, what about a stayed revocation, which would be, you know, you would get your license back, you have to take the spec exam. You have to be treating patients. You have to do record audits. You know, you have to comply with the terms of all that. If not, then you're revoked.
I don't know that I would ever be able to advise a client to do a stayed rev because of health plans and because she is NP, any kind of hit on anything that could affect privileges. So I think the inactive makes more sense, especially given that she's not actively practicing before your board right now. That seems a little more elegant, and it also gives her the incentive, or when she wants to take the initiative, she can then approach the board. The state rev does trigger, unfortunately for us as well, all the due process and everything. So it seems like the inactive makes more sense based on her status right now. If she was a younger DC who has, you know, wants to go right into practice, that's where I think the state rev makes a little more sense.
Okay, understood, and that'll give you a chance to get healthy if when you can and when you feel like you're ready to return to this. Board members, what are your thoughts?
Mr. Chairman, we've been at this for quite some time. We all want to see this thing resolved. And I hope we have a pathway here to get this to happen. But here's the concern that I have. The pathway that we're talking about with the consent agreement to go to inactive or a withdrawal of the reinstatement package, whichever way that works, still kicking the can down the road. I really don't want us to come back here in 2 years and be fighting the same stuff about how long the can is being kicked down the road. So I just want to go on record as saying, let's get, you know, everybody wants this thing fixed. But let's not hear 2 years from now, here we are again, it's not fixed. Let's get it fixed. This is a pathway that I think I would support.
Thoughts? Dr. Knopf?
Yeah, I would be in favor of the inactive path.
Okay. All right. Does anybody want to make a motion?
The motion would be to offer a consent agreement for non-disciplinary reinstatement. The requirement that the respondent agrees, and not respondent, I'm sorry, applicant agrees to go on inactive status.
We move that we offer a consent agreement that allows for non-disciplinary reinstatement, condition that the patient agree to go into inactive status.
Can I make one stipulation? Since we are moving and putting the license to inactive status, we would need to request her website clarifies that she does not have an active chiropractic license.
Okay. Any discussion, board members?
How many days to be signed?
Should we do 30?
Okay. Call for the question. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Are there any opposed? Okay. We have five ayes that have it, so you'll be offered a consent agreement. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. We are at tab number 16, board meeting minutes, July 19th, 2022. And
are we now using the videotape of the session as the basis for board meeting minutes?
I'm happy to do that, but we need a formal motion, so I can put it on the agenda for the next meeting.
Say that again.
No, I have to go back and listen to it. In order to do that, I need you to formally memorialize that, so we'd have to agendize that, but I can agendize that for the next meeting that we adopt the board meeting, the board audio and the video as our official minutes. So,
does that require a motion?
Yeah, agendize it so that it's on the public agenda, and then we can address it at the next meeting.
Are we adding an item to an agenda that's legal to be added to an agenda by
on the next meeting?
Next meeting.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep. Where are the meeting minutes? I'm looking in tab 16 and I don't see them.
I don't put them in there.
Can we table the approval of the minutes to the next meeting and then approve that they were?
Okay.
You can do that. That's a good. Yeah,
that's
do it.
A good move. Let's do that.
Okay. You actually don't have to approve the minutes.
Okay. So we're gonna skip 16 for now.
Okay.
Go to tab 17 to the executive director's report.
All right. So, I provided you with our budget, which is due to the governor's office on Thursday. So you have the complete budget. But what I really want to highlight and talk about is the funding issues. So we have two. One's little tiny, and I'm sure Seamus. But the other one is in my funding request that I put together, I'm requesting that we fund the deputy director position, because currently, if you remember last year with all of the changes with Dr. Nayeri leaving and staff coming on board and increasing staff pay rate, that kind of used up all that position's money. So we've been operating with a staff of four instead of what was a staff of five. So I'm going to tell you that staff definitely feels that. I think your licensee, our licensee base feels that. I think I get a lot of phone, like a lot of nobody's answering the phone. Well, I only have one person to answer the phone. So if they're on the phone, like you're getting voicemail and we're calling people back. Like we're doing all that. But I think sometimes they don't feel it's necessarily as timely. But I also will contend that the workload is growing. Your licensee base is growing. We get, on average, you have a 20% increase in license applications. The reason you don't necessarily see that number move is you do have a pretty good attrition rate in terms of people that don't renew their license. Maybe they're in it, they move to another jurisdiction, or they just don't renew. But what this year you took in terms of license numbers, you took a pretty big hit because I don't think we had done the from admin suspension to lapse since 2019. So it was a pretty significant number when I did it this year in the beginning of 2022. So it was about 363, where on average it had been about 75. And I'm sure a lot of that had to do with COVID. I think a lot of people you already had renewed pre-COVID, so your numbers were pretty good. Then COVID hits, and I think a lot of people went inactive, hoping to maintain. And then when that next licensing cycle came around, they were not able to, and so that license was lapsed. So that being said, I think what you all have accomplished with the access bill, I think that will start to stabilize things I think as our state proves to continue to grow, I think you'll see the increase in the license numbers in terms of that, which will help because business has not slowed down. I mean, we still have applications coming in. Again, like I said, there's about a 20% increase, and that's been across the board. The only year you did not have a 20% increase in licenses was in 2020 during COVID, and it was about 11%. So what I've asked for is the funding for the deputy director position to bring on another board investigator slash monitoring and compliance, because as you all are pushing out this work, like, we can't necessarily handle that influx. Right. So what you guys create here is like now as we're starting to push these things through, there are some challenges in monitoring and staying on top of those orders. So it's taking all staff to accomplish that. And I think that that's the teeth of what you do. If we issue discipline out of here and nobody follows up on it, there's no point in you issuing discipline. So I think that's an important component. I think it's the most challenging component. I think every board would tell you that. That's the hardest part of the job is the follow-up. So, and then having another part-time investigator to help with some of these smaller, these other complaints as they come in so that we are getting through them timely, because as complaints continue to come in, like, we're still working through a backlog. So you see that case number sitting right at 60. Like, we're, even though you're knocking out, you know, 10 to 15 per meeting, you know, we're still getting them in, and they're more complex, they're more difficult. I think you all experience that in what you see and what you're trying to adjudicate up here. So it would be that, and then asking for an additional position, so taking the staff from a staff of 5 to a staff of 6. Fundamentally, and hiring basically like an admin to kind of assist with investigations and licensing and that. So to kind of cover this, the cost, we really do have enough revenue. Oh, the other item I didn't talk about was continuing education. We received last year 559 applications for continuing education, and it's growing by 20 to 30%.
Education providers?
Teachers. Courses.
Yeah.
And each of those applications, I think Ms. Powell will absolutely test if it's a complete good application. I think it's probably taking us 30 to 45 minutes per application just to process those. And the PACE ones they're faster, but there's still some work involved. And yes, FETNIA answers a lot of these questions and helps support us in a way, puts us in a much better place. But someone still has to be there to do that work. So while maybe it's not scanning, like, we still have to, there's still things we're going to have to do. There's still things we're going to have to touch. It doesn't become a fully automated system. So we do have enough revenue essentially to cover the one staff. But I think you need to do it anyway, you need to increase your renewal fee. So we'll leave licensing fees alone. But increase the renewal fee this year up to $205, and then next year up to $225, which would be the max. And Ryan did some significant research looking at other states, especially states that are receiving that influx of population. So we looked at Texas, Florida, North Carolina, those states that are experiencing more of that population growth versus the ones that are losing. And that would put us right at the midpoint in terms of what licensure renewals are. So 225 would be your limit by law. So this year you'd go up to 205, the next year you'd go up to 225. So next year with that increase, that's about $47,000 more in revenue for the board. That would put us at a revenue of about $615,000, and then next year you'd be at like 752. No, you're going from 185 to 225. I was going the path of least resistance. So we haven't increased in 4 years.
Backing up a step, transition to a different software system. is that going to have a increase in demand at least during the transition? What's your take on staffing requirements to embrace?
To be honest, I mean, it's been a lot. It's taken all staff. I mean, we're pushing it through as fast as we can. We're managing everything we can. I do anticipate that we are probably going to need some part-time staff to get through the renewal cycle and all of that, just with the influx of phone calls and trying to help walk people through a completely new system, that there is some anticipation that we would need that.
So we're gonna you guys do all the work, but we're going to take the heat on the price increase. You'll take a little bit of it, but what I was about to say is I think that any number is going to be, they're going to squeal about any number. I would rather have them squeal once than twice, so I would be kind of inclined to make a bigger jump.
I'm open to however you want to do it. I'm happy to present it either way. I'm totally whatever you all want to do, whatever you feel is the best. If you felt like small incremental was maybe like you do one hit, and because the kind of the understanding was when I went back and did some research, right, was you started at a lower number and were planning on working your way up, and we just haven't. We just didn't do that for the last 4 years.
Well, and my understanding is that our licensing fees are still well below everywhere.
Yes.
Most places.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this will just bring you to the midpoint.
Dr. Kanoff, I'm curious about what you might think about this.
Yeah, I mean, the reality of our current, economic climate and with inflation, I mean, just the cost of people and resources continues to move up, and that needs to be accounted for everywhere. We see it in everything else that we buy, so I don't think that this is out of line with what other businesses or other practices are having to do to continue to staff appropriately to deliver appropriate services back to the people that they serve. So I think the increase makes sense. Dr. Bennett, I'm more in your camp that I'd rather just do it once and be done with it.
What do you need from the board? Is this
so,
the budget approval?
So I need a motion to approve a fee increase for the fees for this fiscal year so that this renewal cycle they would go into effect. And then that's really, those are the two motions I need. Hold on, I wrote them down. So I need an increase to the cost for annual licensure. I had originally said the 205 and then a second one for 225, but if you want to do just one, we can do just a single one. And then my next one doesn't necessarily have to do with the budget. It has to do with renewals, though. So I have some wonderful, wonderful news. We have our go-live date for Cynthia, which is October 6th. I'm pretty much got them to sign that in blood. But what I would like to ask is that we delay opening the renewal cycle to October. No, I'm sorry, November. November 1st, just to allow staff to have about 30 days to get on board and make sure we'll have time for user acceptance testing that we'll be doing in September. But the go-live will be October 6th, and that would give us the 30 days to kind of make sure everything's up and running, everything's good, before we open it up for licensees.
With regard to the first issue of the renewal increase, mm-hmm. when is the latest that we can decide on that and still make it?
We're allowed up to 225.
Did you wanted to include it in the budget?
I need to include it in the submission to the budget to the governor's office. to get it approved as part of our funding request.
And my question is, what's the timeline on
that? It's due Thursday.
For all the time.
Well, when the legislature passes the budget late, this is what you get.
Okay. The genesis of my question was, if we had some time, never mind. I won't even explain what I was thinking.
You were thinking a survey kind of?
No, I wasn't thinking. No. Well, since you ask, I'll tell you. I was hoping that we could be less unpopular by not raising the fees and at the same time deferring the renewal.
The other thing I would like to say about the renewal, because I went back and looked, you only have about 120 to 200 people that renew in October. The majority, 957 people, renewed in December.
Okay. So you need a motion, two motions.
I need two motions.
And I would like to move.
Yes.
I'd like to move to direct the staff to add to the budget an incremental increase of the renewal fee.
There a second? Okay. Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Okay, five ayes in favor.
Yep.
Second motion, delay the start date.
Is that what you need?
Yep, to delay it. We would just open it November 1st instead of October.
Okay, so do you want to commit to that date, or do you want to?
I'm going to just delay. Thank you.
I move that we authorize staff to delay the initiation of the renewal cycle.
Okay, second by Ms. Powell. And for discussion, I think that's a great idea. You guys need to learn how to use the software before we start to really get.
And kind of what I was thinking, too, depending on how things go, is we may potentially reach out to some of those licensees that typically renew in November and maybe have them test it from their perspective during the month of October, maybe have you all renew in October, and just to make sure everything's working from that user experience is some of my plan.
Okay. And I think that some of the problems that people have had, like some people have maybe board certification or groups that they belong to where they have to prove that they're licensed by a certain time frame to renew their annual membership in whatever group that they're in. So I'm going to call for the question. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Is there any opposed? Okay. Passes 5. Okay. Okay, for renewal application?
Yes. Okay, so with the anticipation that we are moving to Thentia, there is that list of about 125 people that you have historically grandfathered in and allowed to do a paper application. And that has kind of snowballed over time and has not been maintained in terms of, like, when we get there, renewal packet back, or we get the renewal notice back, we haven't been maintaining that list in terms of the status. And so it does cost us a significant fund to mail those packets. And it's a big burden for staff. I understand it only sounds like it's 127 people or whatever it comes out to be. It's still a lot of work, and a lot of times people take advantage and are just like, well, here, I'm going to bring you my application, who aren't on the list. And as we're moving toward this and we are moving back toward a more electronic base, I would really like to move away from that list and just have people into that portal system instead of via paper, because now we're also asking, in addition, the staff's going to have to manually enter that information that normally would be entered into the portal. And so then if we're going to let them do it by paper, it means they're going to do their address change by paper. And that's all, that's still staff work that we are trying to offload and move everybody toward the portal. The point of the portal is for all of them to be able to manage all of that information themselves and that work coming off the staff.
Unfortunately, the one thing you are going to run into is there is a general statute that if somebody that paper, we have to give it to them.
And I don't have a problem with that. I have a problem that we have a maintained list that we haven't managed for 4 years that we just mail people their application.
I might want to update that list.
You think?
Because that is going to be an ADA issue. It's going to be a lot of issues.
But
an equal protection issue.
But it's coupled with on what Seamus is saying. I understand what Seamus is saying, but we get CE applications by paper, and we get dual CE applications where they submit it online, and then for their record-keeping purposes, they're sending it to us. So in terms, I've talked about the 559 CE applications, really multiply that by two because most of the time we're getting them both ways, and then we don't know which one to deal with, and we're scanning them in, and we have multiple copies. It just creates a lot of work, and I would really like to get to the point where we can kind of point and say it's through the portal. Please don't. We would like, yeah. Well, and but for you all too, it's going to be a better user experience for you because you're going to be able to see everything you've submitted to us, where it is in the process, all of those types of things. It's just we just kind of need to start moving towards that. So I would like to start with January once we're on the portal, kind of know where we're at, starting January of next year, that we would just kind of move away from that.
Well, in the process, that to Seamus's point, the process that we move away from that should include reaching out and saying we are transitioning, have the right to petition for blah, 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 and give them a really hard way to do that.
Yes, no, it would include that.
Okay. Seamus said we should give them a really hard way to do it. No.
Is there any language on the application that says that they're entitled to request a paper, you know, to kind of put them on notice for next year so that they don't say, you know, hey, I didn't know, you know, that this was the new thing and that's why I'm late on my renewal for 2024. Like, I don't know that it would work or not, but.
We'll be putting, like, a communication plan together to talk about and updating the website to include that information. That it is, like, we're moving in
well,
this
that,
direction.
Well, that was my joke. I was going to say, why don't you email all the people who don't have internet that this is the new deal? You're saying you're going to put it on a website.
Well, I'm going to put it on the website. We have to comply with the mail notice. So we may have the expenditure this year of updating those cards or slapping stickers on them or something like that to make sure that we include that in the notice. But that would be part of that communication plan.
Is the provider's email address now part of the database that we collect, and is that part of the? You know,
well, I mean, it might be part of what we collect.
I think a communication strategy will be important just to avoid estoppel arguments. We've seen enough of those.
No, we will. I will put together a communication plan and make sure that we thoroughly communicate this. It's getting that right.
You're just briefing us that that's what you're going to do. You don't need anything.
I think I just need on the record that you would like to, we need to move and start moving in that direction. I think, I believe in reviewing the notes, at one point in time you did memorialize that you were going electronic and that all documents would be submitted electronically, and I think we've just fallen off the wagon somewhere and kind of went back to paper.
Well, that might have been the law from last year, that because the state, the courts have held the same thing. The only court that allows you to do things totally electronically is the federal court. The state courts have constantly reiterated, especially during COVID, you have to provide paper documents. But I don't think that a lot of the people still want paper documents at this
Yeah, let's make it so easy for them electronically that they don't want to use paper. Okay, anything else in the executive director's report?
Renewal application. Let's see. Also, I was just I wanted to tell you that we have the date for Thentia, which is October 6th, is the go live. So that is making progress. It's actually materializing. I think it's going to actually happen. Everybody's had a lot of anxiety behind the scenes, just that a lot of boards have been through this before and are feeling like it's, you know, pie in the sky. It's not actually going to happen. So.
Right. Yeah. Every so many years, it seems like we get hand spoon fed a new database, and it's supposed to solve all of our problems, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're evolving.
We are.
Anything else?
You do have the July financial report. End of the year close finally happened yesterday. So don't have the year in, so what we call month 13. So anything that didn't get put in June goes in that July kind of month for June. So that's not done yet because of the year end. But the budget's done. If you're happy with it, I will submit it on your behalf on Thursday.
Yes.
It's due by Thursday. The only thing that I just would point out is in terms of staff, we did address, the staff did get a 10% state increase from the state, but we did do a considerable bump. But in looking at the state hiring report, our staff received a 17% decrease in their salaries from the year, like 5 years before. So, and our staff was being paid like $13 an hour. And part of the reason we had to do the pay raise is it's really hard to compete when fast food restaurants are offering $16. So the other problem we had is when you are that low, people just, they take the job to get in the door and then they're leaving somewhere, go somewhere else real quick. So to kind of stop that turnover, because you had 150% turnover, and especially in our two frontline positions in the last 9 months.
I remember. Okay.
That's all I have, unless you need something else from me.
Okay, this is the time for the call to the public.
Hold on.
Oh, you have, yeah, that's right. I'm looking at the old agenda.
Amos?
Yeah.
We're going to go into executive session. Are you going to hang around for that?
Yeah, we are.
I'd like to move to go into executive session to discuss legal matter.
Legal?
We were instructed that it's something that should be covered in executive session by board. Legal ramifications
broadly.
You can
do it. I mean, I
won't
be there.
Oh, is that the parameter?
Yeah.
Well, I think it's important for you to understand globally what's going on. So if it's not necessary, if we are advised by legal counsel it's not necessary to go into legal executive session, I'm fine with not doing it. So, on behalf of Dr. Guarino, who was in Alaska chasing down bears on electric bicycles, I attended the special meeting that was called of the National Board of Chiropractic Examiners, and this is what you have is the document that they have issued in response. It's rather lengthy. So what I will do is just do an overview of it. Basically, what's happened is that there was a lawsuit brought against three members of the Federation of Chiropractic Licensing Board relative to an issue that, and it's a, basically a racial discrimination issue. And two of those members are members of the National Board of Chiropractic Examiners, because that's the way the structure works, is the two members of the FCLB, or two positions for the FCLB on the National Board. So the debate ensued at the National Board level, and there was some divided thought. The sentiment on one hand was that the board members from the FCLB who are named in the lawsuit should resign from the National Board because of the conflict of interest. The opposing view was that the members of the designated members of the FCLB did not admit guilt, did not feel as though they needed to resign from the board, and they felt fully fine with recusing themselves on any issue relating to the lawsuit. Debate ensued. Debate became heated. The ultimate consequence was that four members of the National Board resigned. And the question then became, did a quorum exist? Was the National Board able to conduct business? How would those positions be filled? The disgruntled dissenting ex-members of the board proceeded to disseminate information about the issue to general members of the profession and to media associated with the profession, resulting in controversy. And so the National Board convened a meeting to present the legal position based upon the diligence that they have done and what their position is relative to this, which is essentially provided for you in detail in the report you have, basically summarized by saying that the their legal counsel, which has been corroborated by another legal counsel, is that they never didn't have a quorum. There are 11 members on the board. They never didn't have a quorum. They have every right to replace the seats that have been that have been vacated, that the FCLB members were named in the lawsuit did not have an overall conflict of interest, and that they, it was appropriate for them to remain on the board but to recuse themselves relative to any lawsuit-related issues. And that some other issue that I'm now forgetting, but it's summarized in your report. So, and oh, I know what it is. And three of the four positions on the board have now been filled. The final large position will be filled. That's what's going on. The nature of the original lawsuit is not being discussed for legal reasons, because relative to a specific lawsuit as to the true reason for suspension of the person who alleges that it was motivated. So, there you have it. Any questions? Well, apparently so. They the legal counsel, as you will see in the summary, was eminently, like, the largest type of law firm of their, you know, they're out of Washington, D.C., and they have, like, 1,500 attorneys that work for them. And anyway, but that is the position the National Board has taken. Felt it was appropriate that during the meeting, the special meeting, several delegates from the state or members of their state board said, we would like a position statement from you, and then National Board said, we will issue a position statement from you, and we would like you to disseminate it to your boards. We're doing this now. And so if there are no questions, that completes my report.
Thank you so much for attending.
I barely made it.
Okay, so here's my call to the public. If anybody wants to say anything, they can. We cannot reply. Not meant to be a two-sided conversation. So anybody who's on the virtual meeting, this is your chance to speak up and get on the recorded record. You can comment about how you think things went. Okay, meeting adjourned at 2:12.